This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents Cliff's Notes on Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men by Susan Van Kirk, M.E.D. Performed by Nick Podell.
A special note to students from Cliff Hillegas. Cliff's Notes provide you with the combined efforts of teachers, writers, and editors who've studied, taught, and analyzed what literary classics mean to literature as a whole, and to you in particular. Opinions expressed in the notes aren't rigid dogma meant to discourage your intellectual exploration. You should use them as starting points to open yourself to new methods of encountering, understanding, and appreciating literature. Acquire some knowledge about the author and the work, read a brief synopsis of the work, and then read the work itself, reviewing and consulting Cliff's Notes when necessary. Cliff's Notes give you the basics, including such features as information about the author, social and historical backgrounds, structure and tradition of literary genres, facts about the characters, critical analyses, review questions, glossaries of unfamiliar terms, foreign phrases and literary allusions, maps, genealogies, and a bibliography to help you locate more data for essays, oral reports, and term papers. A thorough appreciation of literature allows no shortcuts. By using Cliff's Notes responsibly, reviewing past criticism of a literary work, and examining fresh points of view, you can establish a unique connection with a work of literature and can take a more active part in a key goal of education, redefining and applying classic wisdom to current and future problems.
In this audiobook, learn about the life and background of the author, preview an introduction to the novel, explore themes and literary devices in the critical commentaries, examine in-depth character analyses, enhance your understanding of the work with critical essays, reinforce what you learn with Cliff's Notes review. How to use this audiobook. This Cliff's Notes study guide on Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men supplements the original literary work, giving you background information about the author, an introduction to the work, critical commentaries, and expanded glossaries, all for you to use as an educational tool that will allow you to better understand Of Mice and Men. This study guide was written with the assumption that you have read Of Mice and Men. Reading a literary work doesn't mean that you immediately grasp the major themes and devices used by the author. This study guide will help supplement your reading to be sure you get all you can from Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. Cliff's Notes review tests your comprehension of the original text and reinforces learning with questions and answers, practice projects, and more. Life and background of the author. The following abbreviated biography of John Steinbeck is provided so that you might become more familiar with his life and the historical times that possibly influenced his writing. Listen to this Life and Background of the Author section and recall it when reading Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men, thinking of any thematic relationship between Steinbeck's work and his life. His early years. John Ernst Steinbeck, Jr. was born on February 27, 1902, in Salinas, California, to a father, John Ernst Steinbeck, who had settled in California shortly after the Civil War, and a mother, Olive Hamilton Steinbeck, who was a public school teacher. Steinbeck grew up in the beautiful, fertile Salinas Valley, and most of his memorable novels and short stories would be set in California. Situated between the Santa Lucia Range and the Gavilan Mountains, this valley in west-central California is bordered on the north by Monterey Bay and on the south by San Luis Obispo. During his early years, Steinbeck's mother read to him from books such as Treasure Island and Robin Hood. Young John grew up hearing the rhythms of the Bible and listening to the magical stories of the Round Table from Mallory's Le Morte d'Arthur. He would return again and again to those early influences for symbols and themes. During these early years, John's home was comfortable, and his father often drove the boy and his two sisters around the valley where they saw the workers and field hands in their poor shacks. This early impression of the workers' lifestyles was added to later memories when Steinbeck spent time with these workers as an adult. As a youngster, he also explored the caves and swimming holes around Salinas and watched the changes of seasons. His abiding love of nature and his thoughts about man's relationship to his environment are present in most of his works. In high school, Steinbeck did well in English and edited the school yearbook. He worked at various jobs, and one in particular, as a ranch hand on some of the local ranches, later led him to images used in Of Mice and Men. Steinbeck graduated from high school and went on to Stanford University. Even though he remained at Stanford until 1925, he never graduated. While in college, he continued to write creatively, and he worked for a time on neighboring farms, especially Spreckles Sugar Ranch. The agricultural industry at this time relied on cheap, transient labor. It was during this time that Steinbeck met many of the types of people described with compassion in his later writing. His early career and writing. Leaving Stanford, Steinbeck moved to New York and worked for 5 years at various jobs, writing and drifting. Eventually, he returned to California, and his first book, Cup of Gold, appeared in 1929, 2 months before the stock market crash. This novel sold 1,500 copies, and its publication began a decade of recognition and material prosperity for Steinbeck. In 1930, Steinbeck married Carol Henning, whom he had met while working and writing at Lake Tahoe. He and Carol moved to Los Angeles, where Steinbeck continued his writing while Carol did a great deal of editing. Steinbeck also met marine biologist Ed Ricketts, who was a fascinating and talkative companion. Ricketts inspired the character for Doc in Cannery Row, 1945, and many of Ricketts's views about biology influenced Steinbeck's literary themes. Ricketts later collaborated on the writing of The Sea of Cortez, a leisurely journal of travel and research, published in 1941. During the decade of the 1930s, a time of national desperation, bread lines, and bloody labor management conflicts, Steinbeck knew a definitive cross-section of society and shared the problems and stresses of the times. In 1932, he received $400 for the first of his California novels, The Pastures of Heaven. He followed this novel with To a God Unknown in 1933, but neither novel did well. During this difficult time, his mother suffered a stroke, adding to his discouragement. But also during this period, Steinbeck conceived the idea for The Red Pony and won the O. Henry Prize in 1934 for his story Murder. Two of Steinbeck's pony stories were published in the North American Review, and he was beginning to enjoy some prominence. This was tempered in 1934, however, by the death of his mother. Ironically, Steinbeck's breakthrough novel, Tortilla Flat, had garnered him 5 rejection slips by the time it was accepted in 1935 by New York publisher Pascal Covici. This book, about a group of California free spirits called Paisanos, has often been compared to the Arthurian stories because of the loyalty of its group of characters. The novel was an immediate popular success and won the gold medal of the Commonwealth Club of San Francisco as the year's best novel by a Californian. Just before its publication, however, Steinbeck's father died, missing the positive critical success of his son's writing. Steinbeck received $3,000 or $4,000 for the Hollywood film rights. Encouraged, Steinbeck began his next project, a novel about a strike of agricultural workers organized by 2 communists. As predicted, this latest novel caused great fury because the labor movement at that time was causing distress to the large growers who worried about strikes. Steinbeck titled the novel In Dubious Battle, 1936, and it sold moderately well. Of Mice and Men, 1937, a popular and critical success, was selected by the Book of the Month Club. Following its publication, Steinbeck toured England, Ireland, Russia, and Sweden. He returned to the United States and produced a play version of the book with famous playwright George Kaufman. The play won the New York Drama Critics Circles Award on the first ballot and also became a popular film. When the play opened on Broadway, Steinbeck was already working on what most critics consider to be his masterpiece, The Grapes of Wrath. The Grapes of Wrath came out of the time Steinbeck was working on Of Mice and Men, when he also accepted work writing for the San Francisco News. Steinbeck was assigned a story to cover migrant workers who swelled the California population at seasonal harvest times. Steinbeck decided to travel incognito and observe the living conditions and the violence of the migrant workers' lives. He published a series of articles in 1936 titled The Harvest Gypsies. This experience moved his sense of compassion and stirred up his concern for social justice. In preparation for writing a novel, Steinbeck went to Oklahoma, joined some migrants, and traveled with them to California. Once in California, he stayed with these migrants in Hoovervilles, joining them in their search for work and observing firsthand their living conditions. A major publishing event of 1939, The Grapes of Wrath, became a bestseller and was the eighth-ranking book of 1940, according to Publishers Weekly. It was estimated that over 500,000 copies of the original printing were sold. The novel was translated into foreign editions and won an American Booksellers Award, as well as the Pulitzer Prize, for the best novel of the year. Steinbeck was also elected to membership in the National Institute of Arts and Letters. In a year of great motion pictures, the film version of The Grapes of Wrath competed with Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz. The strong movie censorship of the times, however, took a lot of the bite out of Steinbeck's criticism of social injustices. The Grapes of Wrath was not without its critics, however. The tough language and graphic scenes were too realistic to some readers, and others felt that Steinbeck showed too much sympathy for communist views. The California agricultural community, particularly the California growers and large landowners, were unhappy with Steinbeck's criticism of a system that bankrupted many of the small farmers who lost their land and became unhappy paid help for large growers. Thrown increasingly into the public spotlight, Steinbeck experienced difficulties in his marriage. In an attempt to patch things up, he and Carol set off on a marine biology expedition with Ed Ricketts during the public controversy over the Grapes of Wrath. They traveled through the Gulf of California, later documented in the Sea of Cortez, but his marriage ended in divorce in 1943. The war years and beyond. During the 1940s, Steinbeck did a great deal of traveling and writing. His interests turned to the rise of fascism, and he wrote a promotional book for the Army Air Force called Bombs Away. Steinbeck also wrote a World War II novella, The Moon is Down, in which he described a small Norwegian village invaded and occupied by a thinly disguised Nazi force. The King of Norway decorated Steinbeck in recognition of his book's contribution to the liberation effort. Steinbeck also scripted a war movie called Lifeboat in an attempt to raise American morale. During this period, he married again to Gwen Conger, with whom he had two sons. In 1943, while a correspondent for the New York Herald Tribune, Steinbeck wrote a collection of human interest articles later published in 1958 under the title Once There Was a War. After the war ended, Steinbeck devoted himself to a number of writing projects that left the war behind. In 1945, he wrote Cannery Row, another well-received California book that followed the humorous adventures of the down-and-out living in Monterey. Cannery Row was the first of two books in this period to be influenced by his friendship with the marine biologist Ed Ricketts. In 1947, Steinbeck wrote The Pearl, an allegory about a poor fisherman who finds a pearl that changes his life. Steinbeck's experiences from the trip to the Gulf of California back in 1940 provided the kernel of the story's plot. The Pearl was also filmed, as was another book published the same year and titled The Wayward Bus. Even though The Wayward Bus received poor reviews, it sold well and was a humorous story about a bus full of interesting Steinbeck characters. In 1948, Steinbeck received a blow with the death of Ed Ricketts in a car accident. His marriage to Gwen ended as well, and the divorce settlement brought grave financial difficulties. He returned once again to Pacific Grove to heal and to write. His last two decades. The 1950s brought a series of projects, including some novels, and a third and happier marriage. In 1950, Steinbeck married for the last time to Elaine Scott, the ex-wife of actor Randolph Scott. In the same year, he finished a screenplay for the film Viva Zapata. and published the novel play Burning Bright, which was produced on Broadway. The following year, Steinbeck began work on a 600-page novel, East of Eden. East of Eden is similar to Of Mice and Men in that it revisits the biblical story of Cain and Abel. East of Eden is the tale of two families through several generations and set in Salinas Valley. A story of good and evil, it was produced as a film in 1952 and later as a miniseries for television. During this period, Steinbeck also revised Cannery Row and republished it under the title Sweet Thursday, 1954. Rodgers and Hammerstein later used his story for their musical Pipe Dream. Besides returning to his biblical themes, Steinbeck also returned to another childhood influence, the King Arthur stories. He began a book that would be published posthumously, based on Sir Thomas Malory's Le Morte d'Arthur, renaming it The Acts of King Arthur and His Noble Knights. This book was rapidly followed in 1957 with The Short Reign of Pippin the Fourth, a fantasy about medieval France, but, like many of Steinbeck's later works, it received poor reviews. By this time, several of Steinbeck's works had received poor critical appraisals, and he became discouraged and suffered what may have been a slight stroke. Still, during this time, he wrote The Winter of Our Discontent, which is set on the East Coast and whose main character is the descendant of a Puritan heritage. Ethan Allen Hawley, the main character, sees the moral corruption that has become America. Deciding to join in the immorality, he finds, too late, that his son has been influenced by his example. Regarded as a criticism of middle-class American values in modern society, the book was scorned by critics and readers alike who were not in the mood for Steinbeck's criticism. Characteristically, as it was being published, Steinbeck set off in a small truck with his black poodle, Charlie, in search of America. That same year, 1961, Steinbeck was invited as a guest to attend the inauguration of President John F. Kennedy. The following year, the Swedish Academy awarded Steinbeck the Nobel Prize for Literature, the highest honor a writer can receive. The prize was presented for the body of his work, but it met with outcries from critics who felt Steinbeck had limited talent and was a writer of propaganda. Steinbeck took the opportunity in his acceptance speech to strike out at those critics, saying, "Literature is not promulgated by a pale and emasculated critical priesthood, singing their litanies in empty churches, nor is it a game for the cloistered elect, these tin-horn mendicants of low-caloric despair." Having received the Nobel Prize, however, was a mixed blessing. Although it gave Steinbeck a place of great honor in the literary world, it also put terrible pressure on his future writing. Following Kennedy's assassination, Steinbeck became a friend of Lyndon Johnson. During the Vietnam War, Steinbeck reported for Newsday, a Long Island newspaper, from the jungles of Southeast Asia. His war dispatches were very militant, and he was deeply moved by the deaths of young American soldiers. Both of his sons were in the army, and one was serving in Vietnam. Often a guest at the White House, Steinbeck supported American involvement in Vietnam, and he lost friends who supported the anti-war movement. These years led to his last publications, testimonies to his thoughts and feelings about America. Steinbeck's last two books were nonfiction. Travels with Charlie in Search of America was an account of his trip from Maine to California. This journey was a pilgrimage of sorts in search of America, and he named his truck Rocinante, after the horse that carried the idealistic Don Quixote. Steinbeck's love for America is evident throughout this book, and he felt he had found the modern American character. His last book, America and the Americans, was about his faith that the country would come together despite the pains it suffered in the 1960s. Steinbeck died on December 20, 1968, at his apartment in New York City. He was 66 years old. His wife took him home to Salinas, and he was buried not far from the many towns and ranches that sprang from his imagination and graced the pages of his books. A controversial writer during much of his life, Steinbeck is often remembered with the phrase used in the awarding of his Nobel Prize. He holds his position as an independent expounder of the truth with an unbiased instinct for what is genuinely American, be it good or bad. Introduction to the novel. The following introduction section is provided solely as an educational tool and is not meant to replace the experience of your reading the work. Listen to the introduction and a brief synopsis to enhance your understanding of the work and to prepare yourself for the critical thinking that should take place whenever you read any work of fiction or nonfiction. Introduction. When John Steinbeck published Of Mice and Men in 1937, the world was in the grip of the Great Depression. Americans were out of work, breadlines were common day occurrences, and the future looked grim indeed. In California, there were economic and social problems that increasingly concerned Steinbeck and provided material for three novels about agricultural workers. By the time he wrote Of Mice and Men, the itinerant ranch hands were beginning to be replaced by machinery, and their way of life was fast disappearing. Nevertheless, Steinbeck's story captures the culture of those workers realistically and provides a vehicle for his thoughts about the common man. Of Mice and Men is a dark tale, a parable of men journeying through a world of pitfalls and brutal, inhumane experiences. Their dreams seem all but doomed. Obstacles block their ways, happiness appears to be an impossibility, and human handicaps affect their hopes. When the novel begins, we are treated to a forest scene with the sunshine on the pond and the gentle breeze in the willow trees promising that life is good. But soon after, that nature scene is replaced by a human world that contains jealousy, cruelty, loneliness, rootlessness, longing for land, and shattered dreams. The power of John Steinbeck's vision is that we, the readers, enter this world and are drawn into the journey of these two men, Lenny and George, and we witness their dreams, their hopes, and their courage. Like so many of Steinbeck's characters, Lenny and George are not captains or kings, but little guys. They haven't a dime to their names or a place to lay their heads, but they strive for a better life. They long for self-respect, independence, freedom from fear, a future, a place to call home, and work that they love. From the title, an allusion to Robert Burns's poem To a Mouse on Turning Her Up in Her Nest with a Plow, November 1785, however, we know that this journey will not be easy. First, Lenny and George have very few skills and resources that will help them attain their dreams. Second, their journey is made even more difficult because Lenny is mentally retarded. His powerful body, his childlike innocence, and his fascination with soft things conspire against him. Finally, Steinbeck fills their journey with obstacles, among them lack of family, cruelty and intimidation, jealousy, fear, loneliness, and self-doubt. What Lenny and George have going for them, though, what separates them from the other people they encounter and what makes the reader willing to take the journey with them, is that they have each other. As Lenny often says to George, "I got you to look after me, and you got me to look after you." In this way, they are not like the other ranch hands, who are the loneliest guys in the world. When John Steinbeck received the Nobel Prize for Literature, his acceptance speech avowed that the writer is delegated to declare and celebrate man's proven capacity for greatness of heart and spirit, for gallantry in defeat, for courage, compassion, and love. Lenny and George, in Of Mice and Men, embody these traits, which, according to Steinbeck, are the bright rallying flags of hope and of emulation. A brief synopsis. The novel opens with two men, George Milton and Lenny Small, walking to a nearby ranch where harvesting jobs are available. George, the smaller man, leads the way and makes the decisions for Lenny, a mentally handicapped giant. They stop at a stream for the evening, deciding to go to the ranch in the morning. Lenny, who loves to pet anything soft, has a dead mouse in his pocket. George takes the mouse away from Lenny and reminds him of the trouble Lenny got into in the last town they were in. He touched a girl's soft dress. George then reminds Lenny not to speak to anyone in the morning when they get to the ranch and cautions Lenny to return to this place by the river if anything bad happens at the ranch. When he has to take the dead mouse away from Lenny a second time, George chafes at the hardship of taking care of Lenny. After calming his anger, George relents and promises Lenny they will try to find him a puppy. Then he tells Lenny about their dream of having a little farm where they can be their own boss and nobody can tell them what to do, where Lenny will tend their rabbits and where they will live off the fat of the land. Lenny has heard this story so often he can repeat it by heart, and George emphasizes that this dream and their relationship make them different from other guys who don't have anyone or a place of their own. They settle down and sleep for the night. The next morning at the ranch, the boss becomes suspicious when George answers all the questions and Lenny does not talk. George explains that Lenny is not bright but is a tremendous worker. They also meet Candy, an old swamper with a sheepdog, Crooks, the black stable hand, the boss's son Curly, who is an amateur boxer and has a bad temper, Curly's wife, who has a reputation as a tart, Carlson, another ranch hand, and Slim, the chief mule skinner. Upon seeing Curly's wife, Lenny is fascinated with her, and George warns him to stay away from her and Curly. That evening, Carlson complains bitterly about Candy's dog, which is old, arthritic, and smells. He offers to kill the dog for Candy, and Candy reluctantly agrees to let him do so. Later, after the others have gone to the barn, hoping to witness a fight between Slim and Curly over Curly's wife, Lenny and George are alone in the bunkhouse. Lenny wants to hear the story of their farm again, and George retells the dream. Candy overhears and convinces George and Lenny to let him in on the plan because he has money for a down payment. George excitedly believes that, with Candy's money, they can swing the payment for a ranch he knows of. He figures one more month of work will secure the rest of the money they need. He cautions Lenny and Candy not to tell anyone. The ranch hands return, making fun of Curly for backing down to Slim. Curly is incensed and picks a fight with Lenny, brutally beating Lenny until George tells Lenny to fight back. Lenny smashes all the bones in Curly's hand. Taking Curly to a doctor, Slim gets Curly's promise to say his hand got caught in a machine so Lenny and George won't get fired. Lenny is afraid he has done a bad thing and that George won't let him tend the rabbits, but George explains that Lenny did not mean to hurt Curly and that he isn't in trouble. Later that week, Lenny tells Crooks about the plans to buy a farm, and Crooks says he would like to join them and work for nothing. In the middle of their conversation, Curly's wife enters, and after Crooks tells her she isn't welcome in his room and that if she doesn't leave, he will ask the boss not to let her come to the barn anymore, she threatens him with lynching. Eventually, George returns and tells her to get lost. Dejectedly remembering his place, Crooks retracts his offer. The next day, Lenny is in the barn with a dead puppy. While Lenny thinks about how he can explain the dead puppy to George, Curly's wife enters. They talk about how they enjoy touching soft things. She tells him he can touch her hair, but when Lenny strokes it too hard and messes it up, she gets angry. She tries to jerk her head away, and in fear, Lenny hangs on to her hair. Curly's wife begins to scream. To keep her from screaming, Lenny holds her so tightly he breaks her neck. Knowing he has done something bad, he goes to the hiding place by the stream. Candy finds the body of Curly's wife and goes for George. Both men immediately know what has happened. Candy knows that Curly will organize a lynching party, and George says he is not going to let them hurt Lenny. George asks Candy to wait a few minutes before he calls the others. Then he slips into the bunkhouse and steals Carlson's Luger. When Curly comes and sees his murdered wife, he vows to kill Lenny slowly and painfully. George joins the men searching for Lenny. As they spread out, George alone goes straight for the riverside where he finds Lenny. Lenny knows he has done a bad thing and expects George to scold and lecture him. George, however, is so overcome with remorse that he cannot scold Lenny but must save him from Curly's cruelty. He tells Lenny to look across the river and imagine their little farm. George describes it, as he has done many times before, and while Lenny is smiling with pleasure and envisioning the rabbits he will tend, George shoots Lenny at the back of his neck. The others arrive, and George leads them to believe Lenny had Carlson's gun, which George wrestled away from him and shot in self-defense. Only Slim comprehends the truth, and he takes George off up the footpath for a drink. List of characters. Lenny Small is a migrant worker who is mentally handicapped, large, and very strong. He depends on his friend George to give him advice and protect him in situations he does not understand. His enormous strength and his pleasure in petting soft animals are a dangerous combination. He shares the dream of owning a farm with George, but he does not understand the implications of that dream. George Milton is a migrant worker who protects and cares for Lenny. George dreams of someday owning his own land, but he realizes the difficulty of making this dream come true. Lenny's friend, George gives the big man advice and tries to watch out for him, ultimately taking responsibility for not only his life, but also his death. Slim is the leader of the mule team, whom everyone respects. Slim becomes an ally to George and helps protect Lenny when he gets in trouble with Curly. Slim has compassion and insight, and he understands George and Lenny's situation. He alone realizes at the end of the novel the reason for George's decision. Candy is sometimes called the Swamper. He is an old handyman who lost his hand in a ranch accident and is kept on the payroll. Afraid that he will eventually be fired when he can no longer do his chores, he convinces George to let him join their dream of a farm because he can bring the necessary money to the scheme. He owns an old sheepdog that will become a symbol of Lenny before the novel ends. Crooks is the black stable worker who cares for the horses. A symbol of racial injustice, Crooks is isolated from the other hands because of his skin color. He also convinces Lenny to let him join their dream of land, but he must give up that dream. Carlson is the insensitive ranch hand who shoots Candy's dog. He owns a Luger, which George later uses to mercifully kill Lenny. Curly is the son of the ranch owner. He is a mean little guy who picks fights with bigger guys like Lenny. He is recently married and extremely jealous of any man who looks at or talks with his wife. Lenny crushes his hand, earning Curly's future enmity. Curly's wife is the only character in the novel who is given no name. She is Curly's possession. She taunts and provokes the ranch hands into talking with her, an action that causes Curly to beat them up. George sees her as a tart, but Lenny is fascinated by her soft hair and looks. She is unsympathetically portrayed as a female tease until the final scene, in which the reader hears about her earlier dreams. Lonely and restless, she married too quickly to a husband who neglects her. Critical commentaries. The sections that follow provide great tools for supplementing your reading of Mice and Men. First, in order to enhance your understanding of and enjoyment from reading, we provide quick summaries in case you have difficulty when you read the original literary work. Each summary is followed by commentary, literary devices, character analyses, themes, and so on. Keep in mind that the interpretations here are solely those of the author of this study guide and are used to jumpstart your thinking about the work. No single interpretation of a complex work like Of Mice and Men is infallible or exhaustive, and you'll likely find that you interpret portions of the work differently from the author of this study guide. Read the original work and determine your own interpretations, referring to these notes for supplemental meanings only. Chapter 1. Summary. Two men, dressed in denim jackets and trousers and wearing black, shapeless hats, walk single file down a path near the pool. Both men carry blanket rolls, called bindles, on their shoulders. The smaller, wiry man is George Milton. Behind him is Lenny Small, a huge man with large eyes and sloping shoulders, walking at a gait that makes him resemble a huge bear. When Lenny drops near the pool's edge and begins to drink like a hungry animal, George cautions him that the water may not be good. This advice is necessary because Lenny is retarded and doesn't realize the possible dangers. The two are on their way to a ranch where they can get temporary work. and George warns Lenny not to say anything when they arrive. Because Lenny forgets things very quickly, George must make him repeat even the simplest instructions. Lenny also likes to pet soft things. In his pocket, he has a dead mouse which George confiscates and throws into the weeds beyond the pond. Lenny retrieves the dead mouse, and George once again catches him and gives Lenny a lecture about the trouble he causes when he wants to pet soft things. They were run out of the last town because Lenny touched a girl's soft dress, and she screamed. Lenny offers to leave and go live in a cave, causing George to soften his complaint and tell Lenny perhaps they can get him a puppy that can withstand Lenny's petting. As they get ready to eat and sleep for the night, Lenny asks George to repeat their dream of having their own ranch where Lenny will be able to tend rabbits. George does so and then warns Lenny that if anything bad happens, Lenny is to come back to this spot and hide in the brush. Before George falls asleep, Lenny tells him they must have many rabbits of various colors. Commentary. Steinbeck accomplishes a number of goals in the first chapter of his story. He sets the tone and atmosphere of the story's location, introduces his two main characters, begins some thematic considerations, adds imagery, and foreshadows later events in the story. All of this is accomplished with great economy and careful attention to word choices and repetition. When the story opens, for example, the setting is a few miles south of Soledad, California, near the Salinas River. Soledad is a Spanish word that translates into loneliness or solitude, a reference to one of the novel's main themes. Steinbeck's novel is written as though it is a play. In fact, after its publication, Steinbeck turned it into a play that opened on Broadway. The novel has six scenes, chapters, and each begins with a setting that is described in much the same way that a stage setting is described. For example, in the first scene, there is a path, a sycamore tree near an ash pile from past travelers' fires, and a pool. All the action in this scene occurs in this one spot, much like a stage setting. After the main action in the scene, the focus pulls away from the action, preparing the reader for the next scene. In the first chapter, for example, when the characters settle down to sleep for the night, the focus pulls away from the men to the dimming coal of their campfire, to the hills, and finally, to the sycamore leaves that whispered in the little night breeze. Steinbeck is a master of description, and one of his many passions was the California landscape. The setting in this novel contains the golden foothill slopes and the strong and rocky Gavilán Mountains. It is quiet and natural with sycamores, sand, leaves, and a gentle breeze. The rabbits, lizards, and herons are out in this peaceful setting. The only signs of man are a worn footpath beaten hard by boys going swimming and tramps looking for a campsite, piles of ashes made by many fires, and a limb worn smooth by men who have sat on it. The two main characters are introduced first by their description and then with their names. Their physical portrayal emphasizes both their similarities and their individuality. They both wear similar clothes and carry blanket rolls, and the larger man imitates the smaller. But they are more dissimilar than they are alike. One is huge and shapeless. The other small and carefully defined. Lenny, the larger man, lumbers along heavily like a bear. George is small and has slender arms and small hands. The men also react differently to the pond. Lenny practically immerses himself in the water, snorting it up and drinking in long, greedy gulps. He fills his hat and puts it on his head, letting the water trickle merrily down his shoulders. George, on the other hand, is more cautious, wondering about the quality of the water before he drinks a small sample. In their descriptions and interactions, Steinbeck shows the men's relationship. George takes care of Lenny, who is childlike and mentally handicapped, constantly giving him advice and instructions. Don't say anything tomorrow when we get to the ranch. Come back here if there is any trouble. Don't drink the water before you check out its quality. Don't touch dead animals. But George also realizes that Lenny cannot remember or follow these simple instructions. George also carries Lenny's work card, knowing that Lenny would lose it. What George does not realize is how potentially dangerous Lenny is. All Lenny's transgressions thus far have been relatively minor. He has unintentionally killed a mouse and frightened the girl in weed, but he has done so innocently. As will be discovered later, George mistakenly believes that he can protect Lenny from himself because Lenny will do anything George says. But Lenny's strength, his size, his mental handicap, and his fondness for soft things conspire against them. George seems to be of two minds when it comes to Lenny. He complains constantly that if he did not have Lenny, he would be done with a huge responsibility. He could go to town, drink when he wanted, have a girlfriend, shoot pool, and, in general, have a life. Tired of constantly reminding Lenny of things he should remember, George gets quickly angry when Lenny forgets to get the firewood, for example, and instead goes after the dead mouse. On the other hand, George's anger is quickly under control, and he blames himself for scolding Lenny. In fact, Steinbeck makes clear that despite his complaining and frustration, George looks out for Lenny and genuinely cares for him. The fact that George has repeated his instructions many times, the fact that he scolds Lenny for doing things like petting the dead mouse or drinking the untested water that could hurt him, and most importantly, the fact that George retells the story of their shared dream indicate the close relationship the two men have. In fact, George acts as a parent toward Lenny. He treats Lenny as one would treat a child. He laughs a great deal at Lenny's words, and because he knows how much Lenny likes soft things, he promises to try to get Lenny a puppy, and to let him care for the rabbits when they finally get their own ranch. A recurring motif in the novel is George and Lenny's dream of owning their own farm. It becomes obvious that these two men have traveled together for a long time because Lenny knows the words of the dream by heart, and he can finish the sentences even though he does not remember where he and George are going tomorrow. George's voice, echoing this dream, seems almost like a prayer. He emphasizes that the dream makes them special. They are different from other wandering migrants who have no family and no home. They have each other, and someday they will have a farm of their own where they can live off the fat of the land. They are describing the American dream of owning land, being independent, having material possessions that will provide security, and, in general, running their own lives. Lenny's interpretation of this dream is that he will tend the rabbits, soft, furry animals that provide him with a feeling of security. This is a place where he won't be scared or running because he has done a bad thing. Lenny's voice fills with laughter and happiness because safety means soft things and tending the rabbits. Steinbeck also begins the animal imagery that will continue throughout his story. Lenny is often compared to a bear with his huge size and strength. His hands are described as paws, and he is always associated with rabbits and mice. He snorts like a horse at the stream and circles like a terrier when he does not want to bring the dead mouse to George. These animal images lead careful readers to question Lenny's future. With his enormous strength and his lack of intelligence, common sense, and responsibility, Lenny causes the reader to wonder how well he fits into human society. The title itself foreshadows the events that unfold and the ultimate tragedy of all the characters. Steinbeck thought about naming his story Something That Happened. The stark, unfeeling title could easily fit the story's ending. Instead, he chose a phrase from Robert Burns's poem, "To a Mouse on Turning Her Up in Her Nest with a Plow," November 1785, which contains the following lines. "The best laid schemes o' mice and men, gang aft the glay, often go awry, and lay us not but grief and pain for promised joy." Glossary. Here and in the following glossary sections, difficult words and phrases, as well as allusions and historical references, are explained. Soledad. A coastal California city about 130 miles south of San Francisco. Salinas River. A river that flows through Soledad and into Monterey Bay. Juncture. a point or line of joining or connection. Mottled, marked with blotches, streaks, and spots of different colors or shades. Recumbent, biologically designating a part that leans or lies upon some other part or surface. Coons, short for raccoons. Heron, any of various wading birds with a long neck, long legs, and a long tapered bill living along marshes and riverbanks. Sweatband, a band as of leather inside a hat to protect the hat against damage from sweat. Bindle, slang, a bundle, as of bedding carried by a hobo. Morosely, sullenly, gloomily. Work card, a card with a job assignment usually given to workers by an employment agency. It is then presented to the employer by the worker. Weed, a Northern California mining town. Bucking grain bags, throwing heavy burlap bags of grain into a truck or wagon. Cat house, slang, a house of prostitution. Jack, old slang, money. Sacramento, capital of California. Chapter 2, summary. The next morning, George and Lenny arrive at the ranch and go to the bunkhouse. The old swamper, Candy, informs them the boss is mad because they were supposed to arrive the night before. After Candy shows them which bunks to take, the conversation turns to people at the ranch, whom he describes. When the boss arrives and questions Lenny and George about their work history and skills, George answers for Lenny, causing the boss to question Lenny's silence. George emphasizes Lenny's power and work ethic. Suspicious of their partnership, the boss asks George why they left their last job. George explains that the work was done. Satisfied, the boss leaves, telling them they can work after supper on Slim's grain team. After the boss leaves, George scolds Lenny for speaking. The old swamper returns with an old sheepdog. George asks Candy about his dog. Candy says he raised the old dog from a pup, and that he was a great sheepdog in his younger days. Curly, the boss's son, enters and sizes up George. Looking at Lenny, Curly fists his hands and assumes a fighter's stance. He wants to know if they are the new guys, and when George answers, Curly insists that Lenny must talk when he is spoken to. Lenny repeats George's answer softly. Satisfied, Curly leaves to go look for his father. With Curly gone, Candy explains that Curly used to be a lightweight fighter, and now he hates big guys and picks fights with them. If that weren't bad enough, according to Candy, Curly has gotten much worse since his marriage 2 weeks earlier. Candy relates that Curly's wife is pretty, but she has got the eye, and she flirts with Slim and Carlson. Candy leaves, and George tells Lenny to stay away from Curly and not to speak to him. However, George says, if Curly punches Lenny, Lenny is to let him have it. Then George reminds Lenny of the place by the river where he is to go in case of trouble. Shortly after, Curly's wife comes into the bunkhouse, claiming to look for Curly. Fascinated, Lenny can't take his eyes off her. Then Slim enters and tells her he saw Curly go into the house. Curly's wife becomes apprehensive and leaves. When George says that Curly's wife seems like a tramp, Lenny responds that he thinks she is purdy, causing George to warn Lenny to keep away from her, just like he's supposed to keep away from Curly. This admonition worries Lenny, who says, "I don't like this place, George. This ain't a good place." But George reminds him they must stay long enough to make a stake for their farm. Another man, Carlson, enters the bunkhouse and asks Slim about his new puppies, suggesting that they could replace Candy's old dog, who is old, arthritic, and can barely walk or see, with one of the puppies. Hearing about the puppies, Lenny wants one too, and asks George to speak to Slim. Supper is called. As Lenny gets off the bunk and approaches the door, Curly returns, looking for his wife. George tells him that she was there looking for Curly. George is afraid he will tangle with Curly himself as they all leave for supper. Commentary. Chapter 1 began with a beautiful nature scene, the gentle breeze, the slopes of the mountains, the evening sun going down, and the calm pool. Chapter 2 introduces the ranch. The bunkhouse is sparsely furnished. It is a dark room with just the essentials of a bunk and place to put gear. Once the story shifts from the natural setting of Chapter 1 to the bunkhouse in Chapter 2, things change considerably. Steinbeck contrasts the world of nature and the world of men. At the pond, the water is warm, the breeze gentle, and the light shimmers over the sand. No wonder George wants to spend the night there instead of coming straight to the ranch. In contrast, the ranch contains characters who have been beaten down by life. It also contains danger in the form of Curly and his wife. By juxtaposing the natural scene at the pond with the scene in the bunkhouse, Steinbeck highlights the contrast between the freedom of nature and the unpredictable pattern of humans and their sometimes dangerous ways. The atmosphere of the bunkhouse can be determined by the people George and Lenny meet there. Through the appearance of various characters, George and Lenny get a feeling for the lay of the land. These characters represent various parts of American society during the Depression, and they also speak of some of the sadness of that time: loneliness, rootlessness, and poverty. Candy and Crooks, in particular, are characters separated from the others. Candy by old age and his handicap of only one hand, and Crooks because of his race. Yet when Candy reveals that the last guy, the one who had George's bunk, left because it was time to move on, we see the loneliness that plagues all the men who, like George and Lenny, move from place to place to find work. In this way, Steinbeck describes the general situation of the migrant hands. They work somewhere for a short time and move on to some other equally lonely place. On three different occasions, characters express suspicion of Lenny and George traveling together. First, the boss questions whether or not George is using Lenny for his pay. The second person to question them is Curly, the boss's son. Rather than question their economic relationship, Curly hints that they have a sexual relationship. When he questions George, and George says, "We travel together," Curly responds, "Oh, so it's that way." The third question comes from Slim, the prince of the ranch, whose comment is in the form of a friendly statement rather than a question. "You guys travel around together?" When George answers that they look after each other, Slim says, "Ain't many guys travel around together. I don't know why. Maybe everybody in the whole damn world is scared of each other." This repetition of the same question serves two purposes. First, the fact that the two men traveling together is unusual reinforces that the life of a migrant hand in the 1930s agricultural world is one of loneliness and rootlessness. Second, it provides insight into each of the characters asking the question. The boss, by his presumption that George is taking Lenny's pay, shows him to be a man of business, interested solely in the bottom line. Curly, by his insinuation that the relationship is a sexual one, shows him to be base and cruel. Slim's reaction shows him to be the only one with the compassion to understand how traveling together might help the loneliness. Throughout this chapter, Steinbeck pairs up various characters and situations. For example, the setting of the second chapter contrasts with the scene described at the beginning of Chapter 1. Instead of calm and peace, Chapter 2 has an air of menace largely caused by the presence of two characters on the ranch, Curly and his wife. While George can see the problems that may arise, Lenny can feel the menacing atmosphere. After sizing up Lenny as a big guy but lacking in intelligence, Curly makes it a point to single out Lenny as someone who should speak when spoken to. Lenny immediately feels the menace, and the reader sees Curly right away as a bully. The real problem, however, is Curly's wife. In addition to causing problems between the ranch hands and her husband, who has mandated that she not speak to anyone, she is fascinating to Lenny, who sees only her prettiness and softness, not the danger she represents. George clearly sees the danger, however, and his immediate reaction to her is anger. He alternately calls her a tramp, bitch, jailbait, poison, and a rat trap. His anger scares Lenny, who is fascinated with this creature he has never seen before. The characters at this ranch also are paired, sometimes for the similarities they share. George and Candy, and Crooks and Candy, sometimes for the differences, Slim and Carlson. Slim, for example, is the sensitive, compassionate man whose word is law. Everyone respects him, and he seems to be the only one who is capable of understanding why George and Lenny travel together. Carlson, however, lovingly cleans his gun and is animalistic and insensitive. He is the one who thinks Candy's dog should be shot. Candy and Crooks represent another pair, because both are alienated from the others because of artificial barriers placed on them by society. One because he is old and crippled, the other because of the color of his skin. Both characters will later connect with George and Lenny's dream as a way out of their loneliness and alienation. Finally, George and Candy are paired. Both men are responsible and care for those unable to care for themselves. George is a caretaker for Lenny, and Candy is a caretaker of his old dog. While Carlson wants Slim to give Candy a pup to replace his old dog, George wants Slim to give Lenny a pup to take care of and pet. This final pairing is also important, because it foreshadows the novel's final scene between George and Lenny. Finally, in this chapter, Steinbeck has clearly delineated the lines of conflict. The menace coming from the evil and bullying of Curly and the seductive temptation of his wife. These two are catalysts of fear each time they appear. Even Lenny, who feels things instinctively, as an animal does, says, "I don't like this place, George. This ain't no good place. I want to get out of here." In the second scene, the reader has only to wait for their eventual tragedy. Glossary. Whitewashed. Painted with a mixture of lime, whiting, size, water, etc. Graybacks. Slang. Lice. Swamper. Here, a general handyman and person responsible for cleaning out the barn. Tick. The cloth case or covering that is filled with cotton, feathers, hair, etc. to form a mattress or pillow. Sacking. A cheap, coarse cloth woven of flax, hemp, or jute. Stable buck. Reference to Crooks, who is responsible for taking care of the horses. Skinner. Informal. A mule driver. Pugnacious. Eager and ready to fight. Quarrelsome. Combative. In the ring. In the sport or profession of boxing. Slough. Get rid of. In this case, to fire. Derogatory. Disparaging. Belittling. She got the eye. Said of Curly's wife, meaning that she flirts and is interested in men other than her husband. Tart. A promiscuous woman. Stake. A share or interest, as in property, a person, or a business venture. Mule. A lounging slipper that does not cover the heel. He's eating raw eggs. Refers to the notion that eating raw eggs increases sexual performance. Writing to the patent medicine houses. Here, meaning that Curly is writing to mail-order businesses for medicines that increase sexual performance. Jerkline Skinner. The main driver of a mule team who handles the reins, jerkline. On the wheeler's butt. On the rump of the wheel horse, the horse harnessed nearest the front wheels of a vehicle. Temple Dancer. A dancer known for delicate hand movements. Slang. Past tense of sling, meaning to cast out, in this case, give birth to. Chapter 3. Summary. Alone in the bunkhouse, George thanks Slim for giving Lenny a pup. Slim comments on Lenny's ability to work hard and mentions that it is obvious Lenny is not too bright. Slim then asks why Lenny and George go around together because most of the ranch hands he's seen are always alone and never seem to give a damn about nobody. Feeling comfortable with Slim, George explains that he knew Lenny's aunt. After her death, Lenny just naturally began staying with George and following him around. At first, George accepted Lenny's company because he could play jokes on Lenny, who didn't realize he was being made fun of. But one day, George told Lenny to jump into the Sacramento River, which Lenny did, even though he couldn't swim. Lenny nearly drowned before George was able to pull him out, and since then, no more jokes. George also confides in Slim about Lenny's trouble in weed. When Lenny touched a girl's dress, the girl screamed. Lenny got so scared that George had to hit him with a fence post to get him to let go. The girl claimed she had been raped, and so Lenny and George hid in an irrigation ditch and left in the night. Carlson enters and complains bitterly about the smell of Candy's dog, offering to shoot it to put it out of its misery. Candy looks to the other guys, particularly Slim, for help with this decision. Slim sides with Carlson, and so Candy reluctantly lets Carlson take the dog out for execution. Later, Crooks comes in, announcing that Lenny is petting the pups too much in the barn. Witt, another ranch hand, asks George if he's seen Curly's wife yet. George is noncommittal, and Witt remarks on her provocative dress. They discuss going into one of the town whorehouses that evening, and George tells Witt he might go, but only to have a drink because he's saving his money for a steak. Curly enters, looking for his wife. When he hears that she isn't there and that Slim is in the barn, he goes to the barn. Witt and Carlson follow, hoping for a fight. Disgustedly, George remarks that a whorehouse is a lot better for a guy than jailbait, and he mentions the story of a friend who ended up in prison over a tart. Lenny loses interest and asks George once again about their farm. Candy overhears their discussion and offers to contribute $300 toward the cost if George and Lenny will let him join them. George eventually agrees, and then the three men muse on what their place will be like. They agree not to tell anyone of their plans. Candy admits he should have shot his dog himself. The other guys filter back into the bunkhouse. Slim is angry at Curly for constantly asking about his wife. Curly, on the defensive and looking for someone to fight, picks a fight with Lenny and punches him unmercifully. Lenny doesn't protect himself until George tells him to fight back. When Lenny does, he crushes all the bones in Curly's hand. Slim says they must get Curly to a doctor, but he cautions Curly that if he tells on Lenny and gets him fired, they will spread the word about how Curly's hand really got hurt, and everyone will laugh at him. Badly shaken and in pain, Curly agrees not to tell. George explains to Slim that Lenny didn't mean to hurt Curly. He was just scared. Because of what he has done, Lenny is afraid he won't get to tend the rabbits on their farm. George tells Lenny that it was not his fault and that he will get to tend the rabbits. Then he sends Lenny off to wash his face. Commentary. In Chapter 2, Lenny sensed that the ranch is not a safe place for them. Chapter 3 brings that prophecy to light with a number of occurrences that are dark and violent. The death of Candy's dog and the crushing of Curly's hand are situations that have repercussions later. These dark images are balanced with Lenny's happiness in securing a puppy and the promise of being able to finally get their dream farm. Rather than alleviating the sense of foreboding, this juxtaposition of dark scenes with scenes full of promise serves to increase the reader's apprehension. The chapter ends with Curly's crushed hand and Lenny's and George's claims that Lenny didn't mean to hurt anyone, foreshadowing later events. George and Lenny's relationship is further developed by Steinbeck in George's discussion with Slim. George makes his need for Lenny clear when he tells Slim about the incident at the river. George says, "He'll do any damn thing I tell him to do." Here, the reader sees that George enjoys the opportunity to not only give Lenny advice, but also to be in charge. Lenny gives George stature. But now, George uses that power carefully. He respects the fact that Lenny is not mean and would never intentionally hurt anyone. What George does not seem to realize is how dangerous Lenny's strength can be. A danger that Steinbeck makes clear when Lenny crushes Curly's hand. Witt, a minor character, becomes important in this scene because he shows the life of a ranch hand when he isn't busy at his job. Witt reads pulp magazines, plays cards, and goes to Clara's or Susie's house on the weekend. He simply lives for today with no thought for his future and no concern for saving money, illustrating Steinbeck's point that sometimes our best intentions can be hurt by the human need for instant gratification or relief from the boredom. Foreshadowing is heavy in this chapter with the repetition of the men's attitudes toward Curly's wife. Whit asks George if he has seen her and ventures a comment on her appearance. Curly automatically assumes that she is in the barn with Slim, and the other guys follow him to the barn, assuming there will be a fight. George calls Curly's wife jailbait and refuses to go to the barn. He also mentions the story of Andy Cushman, a man who is now in prison because of a tart. All of these events are Steinbeck's way of saying that something terrible is going to happen, and that Curly's wife will be involved. In this chapter, the gloom is relieved by the hopeful planning of the three men, George, Lenny, and Candy, toward their dream. For the first time in his life, George believes the dream can come true with Candy's down payment. He knows of a farm they can buy, and the reader's hopes are lifted as well as the men plan in detail how they will buy the ranch and what they will do once it is theirs. But while Steinbeck includes this story of hope, the preponderance of the chapter is dark. Both the shooting of Candy's dog and the smashing of Curly's hand foreshadow that the men will not be able to realize their dream. The shooting of Candy's dog shows the callousness of Carlson and the reality of old age and infirmity. Carlson offers to shoot the dog, complaining many times of the smell. He brutally keeps after Candy, and Candy's reaction can be seen in the adverb Steinbeck uses to describe how Candy looks. Uneasily, hopefully, hopelessly. Candy reaches out to Slim for help, but even Slim says it would be better to put the dog down. "I wished somebody'd shoot me if I get old and a cripple," are the words Slim uses that Candy later echoes when he considers his own future. Carlson is the stereotype of a macho male. He relentlessly pursues the dog's death, more for his own comfort, he doesn't like the dog's smell, than to put the dog out of its misery. He quickly and emphatically says he has a Luger that can do the job, and he has to be reminded by Slim to take a shovel so Candy will be spared the glimpse of the corpse. Carlson even cleans his gun in front of Candy after the deed is done. While it may be true that killing the dog put it out of its misery, little concern is shown for Candy's feelings after a lifetime of caring for the dog. Now Candy is like the rest of them, alone. The rough and brutal world of the ranch hand is revealed by Carlson's actions, and then brought up once again with the brutality of Curly toward Lenny. The unfortunate timing of Lenny's laughter is all the excuse Curly needs to fight the big guy. Curly is a coward who would rather fight a big guy because if he wins, he can brag about it, and if he is beaten, he doesn't lose face because the big guy should have picked on someone his own size. If Lenny were not mentally handicapped, he might have responded in a different way to the situation he finds himself in. But he is forced to make a scary choice, and until George tells him to fight back, he simply takes the abuse. Lenny's fear is clearly on his face, and he says, "I didn't want to hurt him," when it is over. He does not really understand the repercussions of what has happened, and he is afraid that he has done a bad thing. But the worst part of this whole scene is the uneasy feeling that somehow, somewhere, Curly will not forget this permanent injury, not only to his hand, but also to his pride. Glossary. Derision. Contempt or ridicule. Auburn, a city about 35 miles northeast of Sacramento, California. Rabbits Inn, slang, jumps in. Pulp Magazine, a magazine printed on rough, inferior paper stock made from wood pulp, usually containing sensational stories of love, crime. Euchre, a card game. Jailbait, slang, a young woman, considered a potential sexual partner who has not reached the age of consent. Hoosegow, slang, jail. San Quentin, a state prison now closed in the harbor of San Francisco. Raptly, with a completely absorbed or engrossed look. Reprehensible, deserving to be rebuked or scolded. Kick off, die. bemused, plunged in thought, preoccupied. To bind her, to make a down payment. Welter, short for welterweight, a boxer between a junior welterweight and a junior middleweight. Chapter 4, Summary. It is Saturday night, and Crooks is alone in his room when Lenny appears in the door. At first, Crooks sends Lenny away, but eventually, a conversation ensues in which Lenny says he came into the barn to see his pups, and Crooks warns Lenny that he is taking the pups from the nest too much. Lenny's disarming smile finally warms Crooks, and he lets Lenny stay and talk. During their conversation, Lenny reveals the secret about the farm, which Crooks initially thinks Lenny is making up. Crooks also prods Lenny about his relationship with George and scares Lenny by suggesting that George might not come back. The more Crooks presses Lenny, the more Lenny becomes scared and upset. As Lenny circles dangerously close to Crooks, Crooks realizes the danger he is in and gently calms Lenny down, explaining that George is not hurt and that he was just supposing. Crooks then talks about his own loneliness. Candy appears and talks with Lenny about the rabbits. Crooks interrupts and says they are kidding themselves about this farm because George is in town spending their money at a whorehouse. Exclaiming that the money is actually in the bank, Candy describes their farm where couldn't nobody throw him off of it. Crooks asks to join their venture and says that he would work very hard and for no pay. Curly's wife appears in the doorway, claiming that she is looking for Curly and complaining that she just wants someone to talk to. Candy says accusingly that she has a husband and she should not be fooling around with other men. When Curly's wife protests that Curly doesn't spend time with her, hates everyone else, and just talks about fighting, she suddenly remembers Curly's smashed hand and asks what happened to it. Candy tells her twice that Curly caught it in a machine, but she doesn't believe him. Lenny watches her, fascinated, and Crooks keeps very quiet. Finally, Candy tells her to go away because she is not wanted in the barn. She will get them fired, he adds, and they don't need to hit the highway yet because they have other ideas, like getting their own place. At this revelation, Curly's wife laughs at the men and says it will never happen. Before she leaves, she asks Lenny where he got the bruises on his face. Guiltily, Lenny says Curly got his hand caught in a machine. When she continues to talk to Lenny, Crooks tells her she has no right in his room, and that he is going to tell the boss to keep her out. Curly's wife threatens Crooks with lynching. When Candy says that he and Lenny would tell on her for framing Crooks, she counters by saying no one will listen to the old swamper. The four then hear noise in the yard and realize the men are returning. Curly's wife tells Lenny she is glad he busted up Curly a bit. And then she leaves. George appears, and Candy admits that he told Crooks about the farm. It is evident that George is not happy, and so the defeated Crooks tells Candy to forget his offer to help with the hoeing and doing odd jobs. Commentary. This chapter begins with a description of a place. This time, it is Crooks's room in the stable. Crooks, the black stable hand, lives by himself in the harness room, a shed attached to the barn. Injured when a horse kicked him, Crooks has a body that is bent to the left because of his crooked spine. The stable hand has many horse care items in his room, as well as personal belongings he keeps because he is a more permanent tenant. Besides shoes, a clock, and a shotgun, Crooks also has a dictionary, a battered book of the California legal code, magazines, a few dirty books, and a pair of spectacles. Crooks's room is a source of pride, and he keeps it quite neat. Crooks's room is a masterpiece of understatement, and its very nature shows how Crooks is different from the other ranch hands. Much of the room is filled with boxes, bottles, harnesses, leather tools, and other accoutrements of his job. It is a room for one man alone. But scattered about on the floor are his personal possessions, accumulated because, unlike the other workers, he stays in this job. He has gold-rimmed spectacles to read. Reading, after all, is a solitary experience. His pride and his self-respect are obvious from the neat, swept condition of his room. In his conversations are both the reality of accepting his solitary position and his anger at this condition. Candy, while around the place all the time, has never been in Crooks's room. The stable hand is not allowed in the bunkhouse because he is black. When he has an opportunity to wield some power of his own and hurt someone else, as he has been hurt, Crooks takes the opportunity by picking on Lenny. But then, sensing Lenny's fear and power, he backs down. Through the description of Crooks's room, his past life, and his current existence on the ranch, Chapter 4 continues Steinbeck's themes of loneliness, barriers between people, and the powerlessness of the little guy in a huge world. Crooks describes his solitary life in terms of all the workers. He shares with Curly's wife the problem of no one with whom to talk. When Lenny questions him about the pups, Crooks changes the subject and mentions, "I seen it over and over. A guy talking to another guy, and it don't make no difference if he don't hear or understand. The thing is, they're talking. Or they're sitting, still not talking. It's just being with another guy, that's all." Crooks can relate to the loneliness of the ranch hands. He goes back to his room and reads alone. "Sure, you could play horseshoes till it got dark, but then you gotta read books. Books ain't no good. A guy needs somebody to be near him. A guy goes nuts if he ain't got nobody. Don't make no difference who the guy is, long as he's with you. I tell ya, a guy gets too lonely, and he gets sick." Crooks's loneliness is part of Steinbeck's microcosm of the world. Multiply Crooks a million times, and Steinbeck is pointing out the barriers and artificial obstacles people and society build against each other. Adding to Crooks's sense of powerlessness is his position, which is made clear by Curly's wife when she breaks up their little gathering. When Crooks tries to get her to leave because her presence is sure to cause trouble, she tells him, "Well, you keep your place then, nigger. I could get you strung up on a tree so easy it ain't even funny." Crooks knows that she is absolutely correct. In fact, once she uses her position as Curly's white wife as a weapon, Crooks dissolves into nothingness. Steinbeck describes him growing smaller, pressing himself against the wall, and trying to avoid the hurt. As Steinbeck states, Crooks had retired into the terrible protective dignity of the Negro. Candy, with his old age, Lenny with his retardation, Crooks with his race, Curly's wife with her gender, all are victims of the attitudes and prejudices of society. Crooks is not only a realist about his position in society, but he is also prophetic about George and Lenny's dream. Like the many other migrants he has seen come and go, Crooks tells Candy that he has never seen one realize their dream for land. The reason they do not get the land is stated clearly by Crooks and echoed by Curly's wife. Crooks explains, "I seen guys nearly crazy with loneliness for land, but every time a whorehouse or a blackjack game took what it takes." This pronouncement is played out in Wits and the rest of the hands' behavior on Saturday night. All have gone into town. They never see beyond the end of the week. Curly's wife reinforces this idea when she tells them, "If you had two bits in the world, why, you'd be in getting two shots of corn with it and sucking the bottom of the glass. I know you guys." It is always the dream of the powerless to have a little land where they can make their own decisions and be their own bosses. In this case, having their own place would ease the loneliness and put a damper on Candy's fear that he'll be turned out when he's too old to work, Crooks's fear he'll be gone because of his race and bad back, and George and Lenny's desire to be free of the boss and do what their hearts desire. But Crooks certainly tells the reality of the story in one of the most poignant speeches in the novel. "Just like heaven. Everybody wants a little piece of land. I read plenty of books out here. Nobody never gets to heaven, and nobody gets no land. It's just in their head. They're all the time talking about it, but it's just in their head." This speech foreshadows George's plight at the end of the book. Glossary. California Civil Code, a book of civil law for the state of California. Aloof, distant in sympathy, interest, etc., reserved and cool. Meager, of poor quality or small amount, not full or rich. Took a powder, slang, ran away, left. Booby hatch, slang, an institution for the mentally ill. Nail keg, a barrel for holding nails. Roll your hoop, a reference to a child's game. Candy is saying Curly's wife is just a child. Chapter 5. Summary. Lenny is alone inside the barn, stroking a dead puppy. Worried that George will find out and won't let him tend the rabbits, Lenny buries the dead pup in the hay and says that he will claim to have found it dead. But then he uncovers the pup and strokes it again, realizing that George will know he killed it because George always knows, and Lenny won't get to tend the rabbits. Lenny becomes so angry that he hurls the dead puppy across the barn. Shortly after having thrown the puppy, Lenny picks it up again, stroking it, and deciding that maybe George won't care. Curly's wife enters the barn and asks Lenny what he has. Lenny repeats George's instructions that he is not to talk to her. She stays, however, and again asks him what he is covering up. When Lenny shows her the dead puppy, she tells him it was just a mutt and no one will care. But Lenny explains that George won't let him tend the rabbits because he did a bad thing again. Curly's wife tells Lenny of her life and her missed opportunity to travel with the show that came through her hometown. Lenny responds absently with concern about his dream farm and the rabbits he will have. Following his comment, Curly's wife chatters on, explaining more about her lost chance to become an actress and how she met Curly. As she talks, she moves closer, confiding in him about the life she might have had. Lenny, however, is still trying to figure out how to get rid of the dead pup so that George won't know. When Lenny explains that he likes to pet soft things, Curly's wife reveals that she, too, likes to feel silk and velvet, and she invites him to feel her hair, which is very soft. He does, but his big, clumsy fingers start to mess it up, and she angrily tells him to let go. As she tries to get her hair away from Lenny, he becomes scared and holds on more tightly. When she begins to scream, Lenny covers her mouth with his hand. A struggle ensues. Lenny panicking, and Curly's wife's eyes wild with terror until her body flops like a fish, and then she is still. When Lenny realizes that she is dead, he panics and paws the hay to partially cover her. Hearing the horseshoe game outside, he understands that someone will come in sooner or later and discover the bad thing he has done. Immediately, he remembers to hide in the brush until George comes. Picking up the dead pup, he leaves to go to the hiding place. Candy finds Curly's wife and runs out to find George, who, upon seeing the body, knows what happened. George considers what will happen to Lenny. They could lock Lenny up, but he'd starve, and people would be mean to him. Candy says they need to let Lenny get away because Curly will lynch him, but George realizes how hopeless escape would be. He tells Candy to give him a minute to go to the bunkhouse before telling the other men. Then George will come along as though he had not already seen Curly's wife. Candy asserts that he and George can still have their farm, but George realizes that it will never happen. Now George has no dream, and he will end up working like the other ranch hands and spending his money in a pool room or some lousy cat house. Carlson, Witt, Curly, and Crooks come back in the barn with Candy, and following them, George. Curly immediately blames Lenny, saying he will go for his shotgun and shoot Lenny in the guts. Carlson follows Curly out of the barn, going for his Luger. When Slim asks George where Lenny might be, George tells Slim Lenny would have gone south, knowing all along that the little pool is north of the ranch. When George claims that they might find Lenny first and bring him back in and lock him up, Slim explains that Curly will want to kill him, and even if he doesn't, how would Lenny like being locked up and strapped down like an animal in a cage? Carlson and Curly return, and Carlson claims that Lenny has stolen his Luger. Curly, carrying a shotgun, tells Carlson to take Crooks' shotgun, and the men leave, taking George with them to find Lenny. Commentary. Chapter 5 is filled with characters whose thoughts can be described very precisely. Lenny's fear, Curly's wife's musings, and then her terror, George's stoic acceptance, Curly's meanness, and Candy's despondency. All occur because of a meeting in the barn between Lenny and Curly's wife, a meeting that seals forever the fates of all involved. Lenny's fate is sealed when he realizes he has done a worse thing than kill a pup. His panic in killing Curly's wife is much like the panic he felt when Curly baited him and Lenny broke Curly's hand. Lenny differentiates at some level between the bad thing of killing the pup and the bad thing of killing Curly's wife, as evidenced by his leaving for the bushes near the river when he realizes she is dead. However, he doesn't fully comprehend the implications of her death, as evidenced by his taking the pup's body with him so that George wouldn't see it as well. Lenny's reasoning is that the body of Curly's wife is bad enough. The body of the pup would compound the wrong done. This action, and the thought process that preceded it, re-emphasizes Lenny's childlike understanding of the events that have transpired. Throughout the novel, Steinbeck describes Curly's wife in terms of her appearance and the reactions of the ranch hands toward her. She has been alternately a tart, jailbait, and various other derogatory terms, used often by George. But in this scene, the reader gets a different view of her as she talks about her own lost dreams. Her current situation is the result of a series of bad choices and unhappy circumstance. She lost her chance at being in the movies because of her age and her mother, and perhaps, in retaliation, she took up with Curly, leading to a loveless marriage with a man who abuses her and completes her feelings of worthlessness. She lives a solitary life on a ranch, with no companion, no one to talk to, and in continual fear that her husband will beat up any person in sight. Although her actions and flirtations have exacerbated the unhappiness of her situation, Steinbeck gives us a view of her past, and we discover that she, like everyone else in the novel, and perhaps even more so, is a victim of loneliness. Steinbeck reinforces this kinder impression of Curly's wife in his description of her in death. Momentarily, the light from the setting sun becomes softer and shines across her body. She no longer looks like a tart who needs attention. Instead, she looks like a young, pretty, innocent girl, sleeping lightly. George clearly accepts the end of his and Lenny's dream. The reader feels that he never really believed it could happen, even though the plan of using Candy's money made it seem possible for a while. George says on two different occasions to Candy, "I should have knew. I guess maybe way back in my head I did." Later, when Candy suggests they could still have the farm together, George says, "I think I knowed from the very first. I think I knowed we'd never do her. He used to like to hear about it so much, I got to thinking maybe we would." Without Lenny, the dream is gone, and perhaps never really existed except in the words that made Lenny's happiness complete. George's words echo the prophecy of Crooks when he imagines what his life will be like without Lenny. "I'll work my month, and I'll take my $50, and I'll stay all night in some lousy cat house, or I'll set in some pool room till everybody goes home, and then I'll come back and work another month, and I'll have $50 more." Gone is the dream. Gone are the complaints about what he could do if he did not have Lenny around his neck. Now he will be alone like everyone else. Glossary. Four-taloned Jackson fork. A hay fork with four prongs for lifting large amounts of hay. Salinas. City in West Central California, near Monterey. In the picture. In the picture. Here, meaning in the movies. Ringer. A horseshoe thrown so that it encircles the peg. Chapter 6. Summary. Lenny is by the deep pool of the Salinas River, waiting for George. He talks to himself, repeating that George will be mad and give him hell. From his memory, He creates his Aunt Clara, who stares disapprovingly and scolds him because once again he did not listen to George. Then Aunt Clara disappears and is replaced in Lenny's mind by a giant rabbit, who takes Aunt Clara's job of scolding Lenny and tells him he cannot tend the rabbits and that George will beat Lenny with a stick. Lenny protests that George has never raised his hand at me with a stick, but the rabbit persists, and Lenny puts his hand over his ears and calls out for George. Coming silently through the bushes, George asks Lenny what he is yelling about. Lenny describes his fears of George leaving and confesses that he has once again done a bad thing. Strangely silent, George explains that it does not matter this time. Then Lenny asks for the story about how they are different from the other guys. George takes his hat off and asks Lenny to do so too. Then he tells Lenny to look across the river while he tells him their dream once again. While Lenny listens happily to the story, George pulls Carlson's Luger and unsnaps the safety. George explains to Lenny that everyone will be nice to him on their place, and there won't be any trouble or theft. When Lenny says he thought George would be mad, George tells him he never was, and the important thing he wants Lenny to know is that he is not mad now. Then George brings up the gun to Lenny's neck and pulls the trigger. Lenny falls forward on the sand, and George throws the gun away from him into an old pile of ashes. The men hear the shot and run up, Slim's voice calling to George. They burst into the clearing, Curly in the lead. The men assume Lenny had Carlson's gun, and George numbly agrees. Slim touches George's elbow and says they should go for a drink. Then, as he helps George up, he says to him that he had to do what he did. Slim leads George up to the trail and on toward the highway, leaving Carlson to wonder, along with Curly. Now, what the hell you suppose is eating them two guys? Commentary. In Chapter 6, the story ends where it began, but the values of the setting have changed. Instead of a place of sanctuary, the pool is now a place of death. Instead of the rabbits playing in the brush, the heron is swallowing the little snake whole. Instead of green leaves and a gentle breeze, there are brown dying leaves and a gush of wind. Instead of safety for Lenny, there is death. Instead of companionship for George, there is a future of loneliness. Lenny experiences two visions in this last scene. One is Aunt Clara, who scolds Lenny for letting George down and not listening to him. The other is a gigantic rabbit who berates Lenny and tells him George will beat him and leave him. In neither of these visions does Lenny experience feelings of remorse or guilt for what he did to Curly's wife. In fact, neither his conjured Aunt Clara or the giant rabbit scold him for that act. In regards to Curly's wife, Lenny simply knows that he did a bad thing and that the consequences will be severe. His thoughts, though, focus on the pattern he and George have established when Lenny does bad things. George scolds him, threatens to leave him, and then ends up telling him once again about their dream of a ranch. The fact that Lenny anticipates the same pattern this time is indicative of his childlike innocence. Instead of asking George right away for the story of the farm, he asks him for the story of giving me hell. He knows this will make George feel better, and everything will be all right again. George, however, cannot finish the story of what he would do without Lenny. He falters, realizing that soon he truly will be without Lenny. When Lenny realizes that George is not going to beat him or leave him, he playfully finishes the story, and he adds why they are different from the others. And I got you. We got each other, that's what. That gives a hoot in hell about us. Now, the story of the ranch and the dream is the only one left, and George begins that, picturing a world where no one will steal from them or be mean. But of course, this story is not reality in a cold, harsh world. There is no place for innocence or people who look out for each other. As Lenny envisions the dream that seemed so close a few days ago, George shoots him as Carlson shot Candy's dog. And like the dog, without a quiver, Lenny dies. Earlier in the novel, Slim told Candy it would be better to put his dog down, better for their society as a whole. This comment begins a number of comparisons between Candy's dog and Lenny. George never really understood how dangerous Lenny could be and always thought Lenny's strength could be restrained. Now it is obvious that Lenny is a danger to society, even though innocent in the motivations for his actions. Candy had no other merciful options for his dog, and George sees no other options for Lenny. As Slim explained, locking Lenny up would be inhumane. Curly threatens to harm Lenny by shooting him many times. When Carlson shot Candy's dog, he displayed no concern for Candy's feelings. The same is true for the others' reactions to Lenny's death. Carlson and the others cannot fathom why George is upset. The final similarity in the two situations is the fearful future of loneliness facing both Candy and George. When the ranch hands appear, George lies about the murder. He quickly concurs that Lenny had Carlson's gun. George feels numb and empty, but he has done what he felt he had to do. Slim understands, taking him for a drink, but Carlson and Curly cannot understand why George feels so bad. Their last words, "Now what the hell you suppose is eating them two guys?" indicate that the world is a cold and harsh place. Glossary. Jackpin. A metal or wooden pin used to fasten ropes to a ship. Character analyses. The following character analyses delve into the physical, emotional, and psychological traits of the literary work's major characters so that you might better understand what motivates these characters. The writer of this study guide provides this scholarship as an educational tool by which you may compare your own interpretations of the characters. Before listening to the character analyses that follow, consider first writing your own short essays on the characters as an exercise by which you can test your understanding of the original literary work. Then compare your essays to those that follow, noting discrepancies between the two. If your essays appear lacking, that might indicate that you need to reread the original literary work or refamiliarize yourself with the major characters. George Milton. George is described as physically small with very sharp features, an opposite to Lenny Small. Milton is the last name of the author of one of Steinbeck's favorite works, Paradise Lost. In that epic poem, Adam and Eve fall from grace in the Garden of Eden. Because of their fall, mankind is doomed to be alone and walk the earth as a lonely being. Some critics believe George represents that doomed man who longs to return to Eden. His one chance to avoid that fate is his relationship with Lenny, which makes them different from the other lonely men. But despite this companionship, at the end of the book, George is fated to be once again alone. George's personality often reflects both anger and understanding. Of the two men, he is the one who thinks things through and considers how their goals can be reached. Once Candy makes the stake possible, George comes up with the details. Where they will get the ranch, how long they must work to pay for it, and how they will have to keep a low profile in order to work for the next month. George also foresees possible complications and gives Lenny advice about what he must do in order to help their future. While George can be very rational and thoughtful, he also gets frustrated and angry with Lenny because the big man cannot control his strength or actions. George repeatedly gets angry, so much so that Lenny knows by heart what it means when George gives him hell. But George's anger quickly fades when he remembers Lenny's innocence and his inability to remember or think clearly. George, unlike other men, has a companion and friend in Lenny. Because of this, Lenny makes George feel special. They are different from all the other guys, and George realizes only too well that they have a special bond. At the ranch, George often plays solitaire, a game for one. Without Lenny, George would be a loner. Even though George gets frustrated by Lenny's mental weakness, he also feels compassion for his friend. Lenny offers George the opportunity to lay plans, give advice, and, in general, be in charge. Without Lenny, George would be just like the other hands. But with Lenny, George has a strong sense of responsibility. In the end, he even takes responsibility for Lenny's death. George also understands that Lenny does not have an adult sense of guilt and does not understand death or murder beyond it being a bad thing. George makes it possible for Lenny, sometimes, to understand at least partial consequences of his actions. Unfortunately, George does not realize how dangerous Lenny can be, and this lack of foresight adds to the downfall of their dream. Their dream also sets George apart from the others, because it means he and Lenny have a future and something to anticipate. Unlike Lenny, George does not see their dream in terms of rabbits. Instead, he sees it in a practical way. Their farm will be one where they can be independent and safe, and where he will not have to worry about keeping track of Lenny's mistakes. They can be secure and in charge of their own lives. However, Lenny is the one who adds the enthusiasm because George never really believed they could swing this farm of their own. He mostly uses the story to give Lenny something to believe in for their future. Only when Candy offers the steak does George actually begin to see that this dream could come true. But, realist that he is, George tells Candy over the lifeless body of Curly's wife, "I think I knowed from the very first. I think I knowed we'd never do her. He used to like to hear about it so much, I got to thinking maybe we would be able to have the farm." In the end, George Milton is man alone once again. Lenny Small. Lenny Small is huge and lumbering, and in many ways, the opposite of George Milton. Where George has sharp features and definite lines, Lenny is shapeless. Often he is described in terms of animals. He lumbers like a bear and has the strength of a bear, but his actions are often described like those of a dog. Lenny's personality is like that of a child. He is innocent and mentally handicapped with no ability to understand abstract concepts like death. While he acts with great loyalty to George, he has no comprehension of the idea of loyalty. For that reason, he often does not mean to do the things that get him into trouble. And once he does get into trouble, he has no conscience to define his actions in terms of guilt. Lenny only defines them in terms of consequences. "George is going to give me hell," or "George won't let me tend the rabbits." He is devoted to George like a dog is devoted to its master, and he tries to follow George's commands. There is a childlike wonder in Lenny that can be seen when he first sees the pool of water and slurps down huge gulps of water like a horse. Lenny's greatest feeling of security comes from petting soft things. When the rest of the world gets complicated and scary, petting soft things helps Lenny feel safe. In petting dead mice, Lenny is doing something that makes him feel safe. Society as a whole would disapprove of what he is doing, but Lenny sees nothing wrong in his actions. When they have their farm, as George tells him at the end, Lenny will not need to be scared of bad things anymore, and he can tend the rabbits and pet them. Lenny's prodigious strength combined with his lack of intelligence and conscience make him dangerous, and he needs George to keep him out of trouble. George takes care of Lenny and makes the decisions for him. George also gives him advice and helps Lenny when overwhelming forces like Curly scare him. George keeps the dream out in front of the huge man as a goal. Their farm is a place where they can live together, have animals, grow their own crops, and, in general, feel safe. Lenny has little memory, but the story of their dream is one he knows by heart. While George never really believes in this farm, Lenny embraces it with childlike enthusiasm. Every time he makes George tell their story, his enthusiasm excites George, too. Lenny's innocence keeps the dream alive, but his human imperfection makes the dream impossible to realize. Candy. Candy is a tall, stoop-shouldered old man. He was dressed in blue jeans and carried a big push broom in his left hand. His right hand is simply a stump because he lost his hand in a ranch accident. Now the owners of the ranch keep him on as long as he can swamp out or clean the bunkhouse. Candy gives Steinbeck an opportunity to discuss social discrimination based on age and handicaps. Candy represents what happens to everyone who gets old in American society. They are let go, canned, thrown out, used up. Candy's greatest fear is that once he is no longer able to help with the cleaning, he will be disposed of. Like his old dog, he has lived beyond his usefulness. Candy and his dog parallel the relationship of George and Lenny. Like Candy's dog, Lenny depends on George to take care of him and show him what to do. Candy, like George, is different from the other ranch hands because he has his dog as a constant companion, someone devoted and loyal to him. When the unfeeling Carlson suggests that Candy's dog be put out of its misery, Candy abdicates the responsibility to Carlson. He tells George later that he should have shot his dog himself, foreshadowing George's decision to take responsibility for Lenny's death and be his brother's keeper. Candy also plays a significant role in the dream, providing the money needed to make the down payment. Because of Candy, the dream almost becomes real. Candy's down payment causes George to believe that, perhaps, the dream can be realized. But none of them count on the tragic meeting between Curly's wife and Lenny in the barn. Even then, Candy still thinks he can have his safe haven, a place where no one will throw him out when he is too old. The dream is so strong in him that he pleads with George to no avail to have their farm despite Lenny's death. Curly, the boss's son, is an evil character in Steinbeck's world. Even Lenny feels a sense of menace when Curly first comes into the bunkhouse. Curly is a thin young man with a brown face, with brown eyes and a head of tightly curled hair. According to Candy, Curly is an amateur boxer and is always picking fights, especially with guys who are bigger than he is. Curly tries to prove his masculinity by picking fights. Another way to prove himself is by marrying a physically attractive woman. His wife is never given a name, but by calling her Curly's wife, Steinbeck indicates she is his possession. Curly refuses to let her talk to anyone on the ranch, isolating her from everyone and setting the stage for trouble. He makes a big show of keeping his hand soft to caress her, yet patronizes the local whorehouse on Saturday night. While he may strut around the ranch because of his position as the boss's son, he obviously cannot satisfy his wife and is mean to her. Curly beats up any man who dares to talk to her. The only one he listens to and seems to respect is Slim. When Curly picks the fight with Lenny, he does not realize the danger he is in. Once George allows Lenny to fight back, Lenny smashes Curly's hand, breaking every bone. Curly whimpers like a baby and cries helplessly with the pain. When Lenny kills Curly's wife, Curly sees this as his opportunity for revenge. In his meanness, he tells Carlson to aim for Lenny's gut so that Lenny will suffer. This, in turn, causes George to make the decision to kill Lenny mercifully. Curly's wife. Curly's wife, like the other players in the drama, is simply a character type and the only woman in the plot. She is defined by her role, Curly's wife or possession. George and Candy call her by other names such as jailbait or tart. She wears too much makeup and dresses like a whore with red fingernails and red shoes with ostrich feathers. Lenny is fascinated by her and cannot take his eyes off her. He keeps repeating, "She's purty." George, realizing Lenny's fascination, warns him to stay away from her. Curly's wife knows her beauty is her power, and she uses it to flirt with the ranch hands and make her husband jealous. She is utterly alone on the ranch, and her husband has seen to it that no one will talk to her without fearing a beating. Steinbeck's initial portrayal of Curly's wife shows her to be a mean and seductive temptress. Alive, she is connected to Eve in the Garden of Eden. She brings evil into men's lives by tempting them in a way they cannot resist. Eventually, she brings about the end of the dream of Eden, the little farm where George and Lenny can live off the fat of the land. Her death at Lenny's hands means the end of George and Lenny's companionship and their dream. She is portrayed, like the girl in Weed, as a liar and manipulator of men. In the scene in Crooks' room, she reminds Crooks of his place and threatens to have him lynched if he doesn't show her the proper respect as the wife of the boss's son and a white woman. All of these appearances cause the reader to dislike her and see her as the downfall of the men in the story. In the barn scene, however, Steinbeck softens the reader's reaction to Curly's wife by exploring her dreams. Her best-laid plans involved a stint in the movies with all the benefits, money, and pleasure that would provide. Her beauty is such that perhaps that dream might have come true. Her dreams make her more human and vulnerable. Steinbeck reiterates this impression by portraying her innocence in death. Curly's wife lay with a half-covering of yellow hay, and the meanness and the plannings and the discontent and the ache for attention were all gone from her face. She was very pretty and simple, and her face was sweet and young. Now, her rouged cheeks and her reddened lips made her seem alive and sleeping very lightly. The curls, tiny little sausages, were spread on the hay behind her head, and her lips were parted. Steinbeck seems to show, through Curly's wife, that even the worst of us have our humanity. Slim. Slim is described always in terms of dignity and majesty. When he first comes into the bunkhouse, he moves with a majesty achieved only by royalty and master craftsmen. He was a jerkline skinner, the prince of the ranch, capable of driving 10, 16, even 20 mules with a single line to the leaders. Slim is tall, ageless, and an expert in his job. His voice is the voice of rationalism. When Carlson suggests killing Candy's dog, Candy appeals to Slim as the final authority. Slim is so respected and admired on the ranch that even Curly listens to him. When Lenny smashes Curly's hand, Slim is the one who intercedes and tells Curly he will not have George and Lenny fired. Slim understands Curly's fear of ridicule, and he uses that fear to help George and Lenny. Slim also inspires confidences, because he is not judgmental. When George first meets Slim, George tells him about Lenny's troubles in weed. George senses in Slim a person of intelligence and empathy, who will not be mean to Lenny, make fun of him, or take advantage of him. Slim is the only one on the ranch who appreciates the difficulty of George's position. He understands the constant oversight George must exercise in watching Lenny and keeping him out of trouble. It is Slim, in the end, who suggests that George did the right thing in killing Lenny mercifully. He explains the alternative. "And suppose they lock him up and strap him down and put him in a cage. That ain't no good, George." Slim is present at every crucial juncture in the story. The death of Candy's dog, the smashing of Curly's hand, finding the body of Curly's wife, at the pool after George has shot Lenny. In each case, there is violence or the threat of it. Each time, Slim helps make the assessment to do what is merciful or what is right. Crooks. Crooks is so named because of a crooked back caused by a kick from a horse. Crooks is the stable hand who takes care of the horses and lives by himself because he's the only black man on the ranch. Along with Candy, Crooks is a character used by Steinbeck to show the effects of discrimination. This time, the discrimination is based on race, and Crooks is not allowed in the bunkhouse with the white ranch hands. He has his own place in the barn with the ranch animals. Candy realizes he has never been in Crooks's room, and George's reaction to Crooks being involved in their dream is enough to cause Crooks to withdraw his request to be part of the dream. Racial discrimination is part of the microcosm Steinbeck describes in his story. It reaches its height in the novel when Curly's wife puts Crooks in his place by telling him that a word from her will have him lynched. Interestingly, only Lenny, the flawed human, does not see the color of Crooks's skin. Crooks also has pride. He is not the descendant of slaves, he tells Lenny, but of landowners. In several places in the story, Steinbeck shows Crooks's dignity and pride when he draws himself up and will not accept charity from anyone. Crooks also displays this terrible dignity when Curly's wife begins to tear away at his hope for the dream farm. Crooks is not without his faults, however. He scares Lenny and makes up the story of George leaving him. Prejudice isn't simply a characteristic of the white ranch hands or the daughter-in-law of the boss. It is a human characteristic, and Crooks needs to feel superior to someone also. That he becomes part of the dream farm is an indication of Crooks's loneliness and insecurity. He, like Candy, realizes that once he is no longer useful, he will be thrown out. Where, then, can he find some security for his future? The dream farm of Lenny's seems to be the place. Crooks promises to work for nothing as long as he can live his life out there without the fear of being put out. Like all the others, he wants a place where he can be independent and have some security. But there is no security for anyone in a prejudiced world, least of all a black stable hand with a crooked back. Critical Essays. On the audio that follows, the writer of this study guide provides critical scholarship on various aspects of Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. These interpretive essays are intended solely to enhance your understanding of the original literary work. They are supplemental materials and are not to replace your reading of Mice and Men. When you're finished reading of Mice and Men, and prior to your listening to this study guide's critical essays, consider making a bulleted list of what you think are the most important themes and symbols. Write a short paragraph under each bullet explaining why you think that theme or symbol is important. Include at least one short quote from the original literary work that supports your contention. Then, test your list and reasons against those found in the following essays. Do you include themes and symbols that the study guide author doesn't? If so, this self-test might indicate that you are well on your way to understanding original literary work. But if not, perhaps you will need to reread Of Mice and Men. Structure of the novel. Steinbeck wrote Of Mice and Men in a play format, using a circular pattern of locales, condensed narration, minimal action descriptions, dramatic lighting, and foreshadowing to connect his plot. Some readers feel that Of Mice and Men is so balanced and thoughtful in structure that the novel is a work of art. Other readers feel that the structure makes the book predictable, taking away from the reader's interest. Nevertheless, Steinbeck's novel easily translated to the stage, almost intact, because of its thoughtful craftsmanship. The locales are perfectly balanced in a circular pattern. There are six scenes in groups of two, producing three acts. The first and last scene take place near the bank of the river so that the plot comes full circle. In the middle are two scenes in the bunkhouse and two scenes in the barn, the latter including Crooks's room, which is in the barn. In each of these scenes, Steinbeck develops an interesting pattern of general to specific. For example, in the first scene by the river, Steinbeck begins with a camera shot of the entire scene so the reader can take in the mountains, the sun, the river, and all of nature in the vicinity. Then he focuses in on a path, and then still more on two men walking down that path. At the end of the first scene, the author does just the opposite. The focus is on the two men settling down for the night, and then the camera pulls out and expands the scene to include the night, the fire, and hills. A close examination of each scene will bring the reader to the conclusion that Steinbeck has produced a well-balanced pattern that beautifully supports his plot and themes. Two other stage conventions include the entrances and exits by characters and, at the beginning of each scene, the setting descriptions. In each scene are entrances and exits by the characters. For example, when Chapter 4 opens, Crooks is sitting in his room applying liniment to his back. Next, Lenny appears in the open doorway, waiting to be asked in. Eventually, other characters make entrances, Candy and Curly's wife. Then, Curly's wife exits, George enters, and the three men exit, leaving Crooks alone once again. A dramatic format is used also for the beginning of scenes. Each starts with a sparse description of the setting, much like a playwright would do at the beginning of a play scene. The first and last scenes have descriptions of nature and set the atmosphere for the action. In between these scenes are brief setting descriptions of the bunkhouse in Crooks' room in the barn and the barn itself. The whole novel contains very little narration. Instead, Steinbeck relies heavily on the words and actions of his characters. A careful study of each chapter reveals that, after the initial description of the setting, most pages contain almost all dialogue with very short introductory phrases. Steinbeck wants readers to draw their own conclusions about the characters and the themes from the action and words of the people, rather than from Steinbeck's opinions. Thus, Steinbeck uses a technique that helps his novel translate easily to a staged production. Within each scene is a pattern of rising and falling action. In the second scene, for example, the bunkhouse and inhabitants are introduced. Suspicion falls on the two men's relationship. Curly and his wife inject an ominous tone, which Lenny repeats with his instinctive reaction to them. Slim soothes the scene, and then they go to dinner. Again, each scene is balanced with this theatrical structure. The lighting could also be attributed to theatrical technique. The first and last scenes use the light in nature for the focus of the lighting in the scenes. In the third chapter, the bunkhouse is dark, and it is evening. When George and Slim come in, Slim turns on the electric light over the card table. The focus is on the conversation at the card table with the darkness all around. From that darkness come the voices of Lenny and Candy, but the main focus of the scene is in the middle of the room at the card table where the light is used to draw the reader's attention to the main arena of action. Light and darkness work through the novel to focus the reader's attention, much like light and darkness on the stage accomplish a similar purpose. A final structural technique is the use of foreshadowing, or transitional connections or signals, to connect and make ideas more fluid. Throughout Steinbeck's novel, there is so much foreshadowing that some critics feel he has overused the technique. As an example, Candy's dog and the circumstances surrounding its death are later repeated in The Death of Lenny. The same technique is used when George warns Lenny very early to go back to the bushes by the pool if anything bad happens. This advice is repeated several times in other scenes, including Lenny's thoughts in the barn and later at the pool while waiting for George. Overall, Steinbeck's novel is tightly structured and intentionally written in an arrangement that uses theater conventions to produce unity and convey a message. The themes of the novel. Much like Steinbeck's short novel, The Pearl, Of Mice and Men is a parable that tries to explain what it means to be human. His friend Ed Ricketts shaped Steinbeck's thinking about man's place in the universe. Essentially, man is a very small part of a very large universe. In the greater scheme of things, individuals come and go and leave very little lasting mark. Yet deep inside all people is a longing for a place in nature, the desire for the land, roots, and a place to call home. The struggle for such a place is universal, and its success is uncertain. In sharing his vision of what it means to be human, Steinbeck touches on several themes: the nature of dreams, the nature of loneliness, man's propensity for cruelty, powerlessness and economic injustices, and the uncertainty of the future. The nature of dreams. In essence, Of Mice and Men is as much a story about the nature of human dreams and aspirations and the forces that work against them as it is the story of two men. Humans give meaning to their lives and to their futures by creating dreams. Without dreams and goals, life is an endless stream of days that have little connection or meaning. George and Lenny's dream, to own a little farm of their own, is so central to Of Mice and Men that it appears in some form in 5 of the 6 chapters. In fact, the telling of the story, which George has done so often, becomes a ritual between the two men. George provides the narrative, and Lenny, who has difficulty remembering even simple instructions, picks up the refrain by finishing George's sentences. To George, this dream of having their own place means independence, security, being their own boss, and most importantly, being somebody. To Lenny, the dream is like the soft animals he pets. It means security, the responsibility of tending to the rabbits, and a sanctuary where he won't have to be afraid. To Candy, who sees the farm as a place where he can assert a responsibility he didn't take when he let Carlson kill his dog, it offers security for old age and a home where he will fit in. For Crooks, the little farm will be a place where he can have self-respect, acceptance, and security. For each man, George, Lenny, Candy, and Crooks, human dignity is an integral part of the dream. Having and sharing the dream, however, are not enough to bring it to fruition. Each man must make a sacrifice or battle some other force that seeks, intentionally or not, to steal the dream away. Initially, the obstacles are difficult but not insurmountable. Staying out of trouble, not spending money on liquor or in bordellos, and working at the ranch long enough to save the money for a down payment. But greater obstacles soon become apparent. Some of these obstacles are external, the threat from Curly's wife and Curly's violence, for example, as well as the societal prejudices that plague each man. Others are internal, such as Lenny's strength and his need to touch soft things. For George, the greatest threat to the dream is Lenny himself. Ironically, it is Lenny who also makes the dream worthwhile. Loneliness. In addition to dreams, humans crave contact with others to give life meaning. Loneliness is present throughout this novel. On the most obvious level, we see this isolation when the ranch hands go into town on Saturday night to ease their loneliness with alcohol and women. Similarly, Lenny goes into Crooks' room to find someone with whom to talk, and later, Curly's wife comes for the same reason. Crooks says, "A guy goes nuts if he ain't got nobody. Don't make no difference who the guy is, long as he's with you." Even Slim mentions, "I seen the guys that go around on the ranches alone. That ain't no good. They don't have no fun. After a long time, they get mean." George's taking care of Lenny and the dream of the farm are attempts to break the pattern of loneliness that is part of the human condition. Similarly, Lenny's desire to pet soft things comes from his need to feel safe and secure, to touch something that gives him that feeling of not being alone in the world. For Lenny, the dream of the farm parallels that security. George and Lenny, however, are not the only characters who struggle against loneliness. Although present in all the characters to some degree, the theme of loneliness is most notably present in Candy, Crooks, and Curly's wife. They all fight against their isolation in whatever way they can. Until its death, Candy's dog stopped Candy from being alone in the world. After its death, Candy struggles against loneliness by sharing in George and Lenny's dream. Curly's wife is also lonely. She is the only female on the ranch, and her husband has forbidden anyone to talk with her. She combats her loneliness by flirting with the ranch hands. Crooks is isolated because of his skin color. As the only black man on the ranch, he is not allowed into the bunkhouse with the others, and he does not associate with them. He combats his loneliness with books and his work, but even he realizes that these things are no substitute for human companionship. Steinbeck reinforces the theme of loneliness in subtle and not so subtle ways. In the vicinity of the ranch, for example, is the town of Soledad. The town's name, not accidentally, means solitude or alone. Also, the others' reactions to George and Lenny traveling together reinforces that, in Steinbeck's world, traveling with someone else is unusual. When George and Lenny arrive at the ranch, four other characters, the boss, Candy, Crooks, and Slim, all comment on the suspicious nature of two guys traveling together. This companionship seems strange, and, according to at least the boss and Curly, the relationship is sexual or exploitative financially. Barriers. Unfortunately, despite a need for companionship, people set up barriers that maintain loneliness, and they sustain those barriers by being inhumane to each other. One barrier is based on gender. The bunkhouse is a male world, where women are not to be trusted. While Curly's wife is always looking for attention, Curly's jealousy causes all the hands to stay away from her. Although Curly's wife is often portrayed as cruel and troublesome, and therefore we can see why she is left alone, the real thing that isolates her is that she is a female in an all-male world. Race is another barrier. Crooks, for example, must occupy a room in the stable alone, and he is not welcome in the bunkhouse. For Candy, the barriers are age and handicap. He is afraid that, when he is too old to work, he will be thrown out on the ash heap, a victim of a society that does not value age and discriminates against handicaps. Powerlessness. Steinbeck's characters are often the underdogs, and he shows compassion toward them throughout the body of his writings. Powerlessness takes many forms, intellectual, financial, societal, and Steinbeck touches on them all. Although Lenny is physically strong and would therefore seem to represent someone of power, the only power Lenny possesses is physical. Because of his mental handicap and his childlike way of perceiving the world, he is powerless against his urges and the forces that assail him. For example, he knows what it is to be good, and he doesn't want to be bad, but he lacks the mental acuity that would help him understand and therefore avoid the dangers that unfold before him. Hence, he must rely on George to protect him. George, in this regard, is also powerless. Although he can instruct Lenny on what to do and not do, and although he perceives the danger posed by Curly's wife, he cannot be with Lenny every hour of every day, and therefore cannot truly protect Lenny from himself. In the end, the only thing that George can do is protect Lenny from the others. Another type of powerlessness is economic. Because the ranch hands are victims of a society where they cannot get ahead economically, they must struggle again and again. George and Lenny face overwhelming odds in trying to get together a mere $600 to buy their own land. But they are not the only ones who have shared the dream of owning land, nor the only ones who have difficulty securing the means by which to do it. As Crooks explains, "I've seen guys nearly crazy with loneliness for land. But every time a whorehouse or a blackjack game took what it takes." In other words, it is part of the human condition to always want instant gratification rather than save for tomorrow. As long as the men spend their money on the weekends, they will continue to be powerless. On the other hand, living lives of unremitting loneliness and harshness makes companionship, even for a weekend, alluring enough to overshadow a dream. Furthermore, the men are paid so little that it is difficult to save enough to make a dream come true. Crooks represents another type of powerlessness. As the sole black man on the ranch, he is isolated from the others and, in ways that the others are not, subject to their whim. This is never more apparent than when Curly's wife threatens to have him lynched. Despite his inherent dignity, Crooks shrinks into himself, essentially becoming invisible under her assault. The fact that she, another powerless person, wields such power over him demonstrates how defenseless he is in this society. Fate. Life's unpredictable nature is another subject that defines the human condition. The title of the novel is taken from the poem of Robert Burns, "To a Mouse on Turning Her Up in Her Nest with a Plow," November 1785. Burns wrote that, "The best laid schemes of mice and men, gang after glay, often go astray, and leave us naught but grief and pain for promised joy." Just when it appears that George and Lenny will get their farm, fate steps in. Lenny just happens to be in the barn burying his dead pup when Curly's wife comes in. In this case, fate is given a hand by Lenny's inability to control his strength and understand what to do. Nevertheless, often life seems unpredictable and full of overwhelming difficulties. Christian, classical, and natural influences. Many critics have compared Of Mice and Men to influences from John Milton's Paradise Lost and the Bible. And, indeed, many of the events of Steinbeck's novel parallel the biblical stories of the loss of paradise and Cain and Abel. Of particular relevance to Of Mice and Men is the question posed in the biblical story of Cain and Abel: am I my brother's keeper? Also relevant is the story of Adam and Eve and their being cast out of Eden. Although a biblical story, this story is also the basis of John Milton's epic poem Paradise Lost, which describes Lucifer's, Satan's, fall from heaven, and the creation of hell, as well as Eve and Adam's fall from grace. Steinbeck was influenced by the Arthurian legends as well, and the fellowship embodied in these tales also is relevant to Of Mice and Men. The loyalty and companionship, the love and trust shown between George and Lenny are similar to the comradeship of the knights of the Arthurian tales. The knight's pledge to help those who are less fortunate and to defend the poor and powerless is also a motif apparent in Of Mice and Men. Additionally, the idea that nothing endures forever especially Perfection, reflects an Arthurian influence. Throughout his novel, Steinbeck uses nature to reflect the mood of the scenes and provide locations that reinforce themes. Steinbeck was a lover of nature, particularly the California countryside, and he uses nature in this story as both a place of sanctuary and also a reflection of foreboding. Loss of Paradise. There are parallels between the biblical tale of Adam and Eve and the events that transpire in Of Mice and Men. Of particular interest are the nature of imperfect humans, the presence of temptation, and the consequences of doing, as Lenny would say, a bad thing. The story of Adam and Eve's fall from grace is a tale of how even our best laid plans go astray because of the imperfection of our humanity. Though mankind was created in God's image, man's reaction to temptation causes him to lose his way. Just as man is imperfect, so Lenny represents the flawed human appetite that makes the chance for Eden futile. His desire to touch soft things and his inability to foresee the results of his actions put him in a collision course with other human beings. While he sometimes realizes he has done a bad thing, he often loses his way because of temptation. The girl in Weed and Curly's wife are both temptations that encouraged his curiosity and that he could not resist. Curly's wife also has a part to play, as the serpent in the garden. She is temptation, a liar and a manipulator of men in order to get her way. She could also be compared to Eve. In the Garden of Eden, Eve is curious about the forbidden tree. She tempts Adam and manipulates him in order to get her way. Like Eve, Curly's wife is curious about Lenny. From the moment she realizes he is the machine that hurt her husband, she is attracted to his strength. When they talk in the barn, she invites him to touch her soft hair, not realizing the consequences. Her actions are innocent, but the consequences are vast. Just as Eve's actions caused mankind to be sent out of the perfect place, Curly's wife's actions tempt Lenny, whose subsequent actions cause him and the others to lose their dream of a little farm. Also, because Adam and Eve were thrown out of Eden for disobeying God, mankind is forced to live a pattern of loneliness and wandering, having thrown away existence in Eden. Steinbeck reinforces this idea when George asks about the worker who used to inhabit his bunk and is told by Candy that he just left, saying, "Give me my time one night like any guy would." George takes his spot, bringing Lenny along, an action causing suspicion in the minds of others on the ranch. Guys don't travel together. Even Slim comments on their unusual companionship. In the end, with Lenny's death, George is once again sentenced to wander alone and to reflect on the loss of Lenny in his life. My Brother's Keeper. In the story of Cain and his brother Abel, found in the fourth chapter of Genesis, Cain, an imperfect human and son of Adam and Eve, slew his brother out of jealousy. When God asked Cain where his brother was, Cain replied, "Am I my brother's keeper?" God knew Cain murdered his brother and sentenced Cain to walk the earth as a wanderer. When the loneliness was too much for Cain to bear, he begged God to kill him and put an end to it, but God forbade anyone to kill Cain because he must be punished for breaking God's law. This story has many parallels in Of Mice and Men. The first parallel is the question of Cain, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Steinbeck essentially asks this same question in his other works, such as The Grapes of Wrath or East of Eden, when he wonders if mankind should go alone in the world or be responsible and helpful to others who are less fortunate. In the character of George, the answer seems to be the latter. George takes responsibility for Lenny, and Lenny depends on him. Furthermore, the noble characters, such as Slim, are those that recognize and honor this responsibility. When George kills Lenny, he is sentenced to be like the other migrant hands, no longer traveling with someone he loves, and no longer with goals or a dream of a different future. George is sentenced to the scenario described by Crooks when he told the others that no one ever gets their dreams. George will now wander from ranch to ranch, alone like the other migrant workers, and he will live the nightmare he described when he talked about his life without Lenny. No companion, no roots, no future. The ephemeral nature of life. Steinbeck was also influenced by the Arthurian legends. These tales reinforce the ideas that perfection cannot last and that nothing is permanent. In the stories of Camelot, the dream of the perfect place, similar to the Garden of Eden, is lost because of human weakness. Just as Camelot comes crumbling down because of the illicit love of Lancelot for the king's wife and the improper circumstances of Arthur's birth, so mankind is always subject to temptation. In Steinbeck's story, the dream of the little farm is lost because of Lenny's inability to control his strength or make decisions about how he uses it. His weakness is one of intellect and common sense. The dream of perfection, their little farm, will always elude George and Lenny because they are far from perfection. In addition, the fellowship of the knights in that story contains a human element that the reader sees in the love and compassion of George for Lenny and the trust and loyalty of Lenny for George. George tells the others that he took Lenny along with him, almost like a puppy, after Lenny's Aunt Clara died. But George also gets Lenny his own pup and laughs at Lenny's delight, and he tells Lenny to defend himself against Curly. George explains to Slim that he felt bad when he played a joke on Lenny, and he will not ever do that again just to feel superior. George's frustration in the end, when Lenny remembers so well everything George tells him, is a measure of George's love before he mercifully kills his friend. Furthermore, Lenny constantly watches and emulates George, copying his actions and attitudes. George says, "If I told him to walk over a cliff, over he'd go." Whatever George says, Lenny quickly does. Throughout the story, their relationship reflects the same fellowship as the Arthurian knights, who pledged their love and loyalty to each other. Nature. Steinbeck also uses nature images to reinforce his themes and to set the mood. In Chapter 1, for example, before Lenny and George get to the ranch, George decides they will stay at the pond overnight. This pool is a place of primeval innocence, a sanctuary away from the world of humans. If Lenny gets in trouble, it is the place to which he should return. In this scene, nature is a place of safety, a haven from the troubles of the world. When Lenny returns to the pond in the last scene, nature is not so tranquil. The sun has left the valley, and a heron captures and swallows a water snake, while its tail waved frantically. The wind now rushes and drives through the trees in gusts, and the dry leaves fall from the sycamore. Instead of a place of happiness, dream retelling, and fellowship, as it was at the beginning, the pond is now a place of loneliness, fear, and death. Here, nature reflects the mood of the human world. Steinbeck's thoughts on man's relationship to the land is a motif throughout his writing. The words of the Swedish Academy in awarding Steinbeck the Nobel Prize for Literature recognize this close relationship between man and the land in Steinbeck's writing. But in him, Steinbeck, we find the American temperament also in his great feeling for nature, for the tilled soil, the wasteland, the mountains, and the ocean coasts, all an inexhaustible source of inspiration to Steinbeck in the midst of and beyond the world of human beings. Symbolism in Of Mice and Men. An allegory is a story that uses character types to represent specific ideas and create a universal message. In Of Mice and Men, Steinbeck uses his characters, locations, animal imagery, and a simple game of cards to demonstrate to his readers that most people dream about lives of great significance. But in reality, most humans' limitations keep these dreams from coming true, and in the long run, they are destined to experience common lives. Characters. George and Lenny are the only two characters in the novel who are explained in any detail. The other characters are all types, or people whom the reader might recognize as one of a certain group. Even the names of the characters, short and descriptive, say something about them. Lenny Small, for instance, is anything but small physically, and other characters seem to notice and comment on that. His brain is small, and his ability to reason is small, but his body is huge and very powerful. Curly's wife has no name, indicating her powerless position on the ranch. Each of the characters represents a kind of person in American society, and often one that is a victim of discrimination. For example, Crooks represents a segment of American society that is discriminated against because of race. Curly's wife, because of gender. Candy, because of old age and physical handicap. Carlson is a perfect example of a selfish oaf, interested only in his creature comforts and oblivious to anyone else's feelings. Slim is the consummate example of understanding and gentleness beneath a wise and experienced exterior. The pugnacious Curly is the little guy who loves to flaunt his power and status. Each of these minor characters impact negatively or positively Lenny and George's dream of having their own farm. Locations. The pool described in the first paragraph of the novel is a place of sanctuary. Away from the world of humans, the Salinas River drops in close to the hillside bank and runs deep and green. The water is warm, too, for it has slipped twinkling over the yellow sands in the sunlight before reaching the narrow pool. Steinbeck goes on to describe the strong and rocky Gabilon Mountains and the golden foothill slopes. A gentle breeze and fresh green willow trees line the pool. In this place of sanctuary, George and Lenny enjoy one last night before going into the ranch. Here, there are no voices, no scary things for Lenny, no hurry, and no concerns about work. But the pool represents another kind of sanctuary. George asks Lenny if he can remember this place, especially since it is on the river, an easy sign for Lenny to follow. George repeats several times his directions to Lenny. "Lenny, if you just happen to get in trouble like you always done before, I want you to come right here and hide in the brush till I come for you." This is the place where Lenny can come and George can meet him and help him again as he did when Lenny got in trouble in Weed. If necessary, the pool will be their meeting place so they can get away once again. Later, when the doomed Lenny returns to the pool, he sadly repeats, "I didn't forget, you bet. God damn. Hide in the brush and wait for George." For Lenny, this is where George will make everything right, and he will be safe. While this is also the place where Lenny's dream will die, it will do so with peace and tranquility, at least in Lenny's mind. When George describes the dream, later at this pool, the atmosphere of nature and its beauty obviously inspire his words. He tells Lenny, "You and me, everybody gonna be nice to you. Ain't gonna be no more trouble. Nobody gonna hurt nobody nor steal from 'em." Now this place has also become enmeshed in the retelling of the dream that will bring them better lives. And even though we know that the dream is retold here with another meaning for George, we also see that Lenny hears this story once again with eagerness in his voice and anticipation in his words. Here in this beautiful place, George will save Lenny from the cruelty of Curly and help him die with his picture of their farm in his head. The dream farm is another location. It does not exist in reality, but is very real in the minds of Lenny and eventually George. It becomes a symbol for their relationship, and the retelling of the dream has become a ritual. This is the place where George and Lenny will have self-respect and independence. They will live off the fat of the land, and no one will tell them what to do. Lenny can have what he likes the best, soft rabbits to pet, and he will feel safe. George can have a more normal life that involves putting down roots and staying in one place. At the farm, George will also have an easier time keeping track of Lenny. When Candy offers the money to put down a payment, the symbol begins to become a reality. Unfortunately, the dream is an enchanted concept, and once its reality becomes possible, it begins to die. In opposition to these two positive symbols is the bunkhouse, which represents the cruel world of reality. Even Lenny, with his mental handicap, can intuitively feel that the bunkhouse is not a good place. After meeting Curly, Lenny tells George,
"I don't like this place, George. This ain't no good place. I want to get out of here."
And as soon as Curly's wife comes alone to the bunkhouse, George knows exactly where the trouble is going to originate. He cautions Lenny not to talk to Curly's wife and to stay away from Curly. It is also in the bunkhouse that we see discrimination against Candy and Crooks. Cruelty, Curly's wife's attack on Crooks and Curly's attack on Lenny. Insensitivity, Carlson's killing Candy's dog. And suspicion, Curly's jealousy, several characters' presumptions about why Lenny and George are traveling together. This is also a world in which fate often plays a hand, and the humans are frequently defenseless and see their best-laid plans go awry. Animal imagery. Steinbeck also uses animal images in his story. Most often applied to Lenny, imagery is particularly apparent in his physical description. His hands are called paws and indicate trouble when he uses them. He lumbers along like a bear in Steinbeck's earliest descriptions of him. Lenny is also associated with rabbits, which are part of his dream. He will get to tend them on the farm, and because they are soft things he likes to pet. Rabbits also symbolize his realization that he is in trouble. If Lenny does a bad thing, George will not let him tend the rabbits. In the last scene, when Lenny is at the pool waiting for George, a rabbit appears to him, berating him, and telling him that George will not let him care for the rabbits. In addition, Lenny's loyalty to George is frequently described like that of a dog, especially a terrier. Steinbeck chose these images because they connote particular traits: unleashed power, conscience, and loyalty. In this way, it helps the reader understand Lenny and why he often acts instinctively. George's card game. Steinbeck is often described by critics as a believer in a non-teleological world. This is a world where chance plays a major role. It is chance, for instance, that Slim happens to be in the barn when Curly comes into the bunkhouse looking for his wife. It is also chance that George is absent from the barn when Lenny is burying his pup and Curly's wife comes in. Steinbeck tries to show that man cannot understand everything that happens, nor can he control the world around him. For this reason, events often appear to be random. George's solitaire game in the bunkhouse is exactly that. It symbolizes the random appearance of events just as cards are drawn out at random from the deck. All is a matter of chance in solitaire, and the same is true of the events in the book that Steinbeck thought about titling, Something That Happened. The isolation of the ranch and the interplay of personalities in the bunkhouse also contribute to the idea of chance. The world is unpredictable, and in this setting, plans often go awry. Hands. Hands are also used symbolically throughout the novel. The men on the ranch are called hands, indicating that each has a job to do to make the ranch work as a whole. This takes away their humanity and individual personalities. They are workers, not men. Lenny's hands, or paws, are symbols of trouble. Whenever he uses them, as he does on Curly, trouble ensues. Candy's missing hand is a symbol of his helplessness in the face of advancing old age, and his fear that he will be deemed useless and fired when only one hand is not enough. George's hands are small and strong, the hands of a doer and a planner. Curly's hands are mean and cruel, and one, of course, is crushed in the machine that is Lenny. Curly's hand that he keeps soft for his wife is a symbol of his impotence and inability to satisfy his wife sexually. Crooks's hands are pink, and Curly's wife's hands have red nails. Slim has large, skillful hands like those of a temple dancer. The hand images represent the essence of each person. Cliff's Notes Review. Use this Cliff's Notes review to test your understanding of the original text and reinforce what you've learned in this book. After you work through the review and essay questions, identify the quote section, and the fun and useful practice projects, you're well on your way to understanding a comprehensive and meaningful interpretation of Mice and Men. Q&A 1. Early in the novel, when Lenny likes to pet soft things, Steinbeck is using what technique? A. Symbolism. B. Foreshadowing. C. Figurative language. Answer: B. Foreshadowing. 2. Candy described Curly's new wife as A. Tart. B. Good cook. C. Complainer. Answer: A. Tart. 3. George and Lenny's plan for a farm draws the interest of A. Curly and his wife. B. Slim and Candy. C. Candy and Crooks. Answer: C. Candy and Crooks. 4. You done it, didn't you? I suppose you're glad. Everybody knowed you'd mess things up. You wasn't no good. This is said, A. by Lenny to his dead pup. B. by George to Lenny in the barn. C. by Candy to Curly's dead wife. Answer: C. by Candy to Curly's dead wife. 5. George kills Lenny because A. Lenny was guilty of murder. B. A long court trial would be hard on Lenny. C. George was afraid Curly would hurt Lenny. Answer: C. George was afraid Curly would hurt Lenny. Identify the quote. 1. A guy goes nuts if he ain't got nobody. Don't make no difference who the guy is, long as he's with you. I tell ya, a guy gets too lonely and he gets sick. Answer: Crooks, when he is talking to Lenny in his room about how lonely he is. 2. When I think of the swell time I could have without you, I go nuts. I never get no peace. Answer: George explaining to Lenny how he is too big a burden for George. 3. When they had them previews, I could have went to them and spoke in the radio, and it wouldn't have cost me a cent because I was in the picture. Answer: Curly's wife explaining to Lenny about the dream she had before she married Curly. 4. You seen what they done to my dog tonight. They says he wasn't no good to himself nor nobody else. When they canned me here, I wished somebody'd shoot me. Answer: Candy describing his fear that he will be turned out because of his age and handicap. Essay questions. 1. Steinbeck was going to name his story Something That Happened. Instead, he named it Of Mice and Men. Which title do you think is more appropriate to the novel as a whole? Explain your answer. 2. In tragedies, the central character comes to a realization about his life or an understanding of life in general as a result of his suffering. Is this true of Mice and Men? Explain. 3. Explain Steinbeck's use of foreshadowing in Of Mice and Men. 4. Choose a symbol used by Steinbeck and explain its significance in the novel. Practice projects. 1. Research migrant workers in America during the 1930s, today, or both. Give a presentation to the class detailing what you find. Note any similarities or differences between what you discovered in your research and Steinbeck's portrayal in Of Mice and Men. 2. Interview 3 people who lived during the Depression and present your findings to the class. 3. Watch at least 1 film version of the novel and compare it with the book. Visit CliffsNotes.com for more study help. The learning doesn't need to stop here. If you think the Cliff's Notes universe is limited to literature, think again. We've developed an entire family of series to see you through all sorts of tricky classes and intimidating exams. Don't settle for generic study notes from unknown sources. Trust your grades to the real deal, trustworthy study guides written by real teachers and professors. When you're online, make your first stop CliffsNotes.com to get the most out of your busy schedule. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Cliff's Notes on Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men by Susan Van Kirk, M.E.D. Copyright 2001 by Wiley Publishing, Inc. Adaptation of original text, copyright 2011 by Wiley Publishing, Inc. Performed by Nick Podell. Directed by Max Blomquist. Engineered by Chris Kessel. Performance copyright 2010 by Brilliance Audio. Published by arrangement with Wiley Publishing, Inc., Indianapolis, Indiana. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.